It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here. We'll talk about Windows 11. Why there's so little usage of Windows 11 and what Microsoft could do to change that. There are some new beta channel builds and some new features. We'll talk about that. Earnings, a few extras. We'll talk about the Nuvia chip that Qualcomm's announcing and how you can use Google One's VPN on your PC. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 802, recorded Wednesday, November 9th, 2022. Tiny Cricket Hammer. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Money, formerly known as Truebill. Are you wasting money on subscriptions? Well, cancel your unnecessary subscriptions right now in the app at rocketmoney.com/windows. Seriously, it could save you hundreds a year. And by Lenovo, orchestrated by the experts at CDW to help transform your organization with Lenovo ThinkPads, equipped with the Intel Evo platform for effortless connectivity and collaboration from anywhere. Learn more at cdw.com/Lenovo client. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft with... What are you doing, Mr. Paul Thurrott?
I can't stop talking. I have a problem. I don't know.
It's a good... It's actually a good...
You're like, I'm going to start the show, and I'm like...
No, it's a good thing for a show host to talk a lot. People often write me and saying, Leo, stop talking. I said, no.
Right.
That's my job. Yes. Paul Thurrott. Thurrott.com is his blog, his site. Become a premium member and enjoy the goodness. And there's even more goodness at leanpub.com. That's where the field guide to Windows 11 now lives. Yay. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. And everyone who gets a copy of Field Guide for Windows 11 gets a copy of Field Guide for Windows 10. So
that's right.
You get it all.
Do the math. Do the math.
It's 21 if I add it up. It's pretty good.
That's right.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Good to see you, Mr. Thurrott.
You too.
Thank you, for your service in Pennsylvania. Well done.
Yep. That's two in a row for us here since we moved. Is there another state you'd like us to maybe move to next time?
Can we fix Georgia or maybe Florida?
Florida,
yeah. Sure. We have a lot of Republicans who listen to this show, and we're just fooling around. Don't take it personally. Don't take it personally.
I'll just say Pennsylvania, right? You know, last several years has been kind of a purple state. It's been an eye-opening experience, I would say.
Yeah.
And
it's not blue now.
Yeah. I mean, historically, actually, Pennsylvania has been blue.
Yeah. It was only for, it was that interim.
I think it was Reagan, basically. I think was the last one, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But so. I think last night we all won, don't you think?
Well, that's the thing.
we all won. Everybody won because nobody won. Sure. Like it was a tie, which is great. I think that's fine. A tie is better than, you know, the alternative. Mr. Thurrott, somebody just joined the chat room saying, where's Mary Jo? I suppose it's appropriate that we might mention that Mary Jo has a new job. Directions.
Who
on
is
Microsoft.
This Mary Jo of whom you speak?
I know you've forgotten her already. She's in the rearview mirror, baby. So she'll join us from time to time, as will others.
She texts me photos from like her in bars at night, you know, and it's like, okay, I get it.
I can drink now. No, she was going to the bars anyway. I don't think that's changed. I think she misses you, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see her here soon.
Yes, we will. We will. Yeah.
And others, too. Mm-hmm. I know Rich Campbell is going to be joining us for a few times next month. And so we're just going to, you know, it's back to the good old days of Windows Weekly with Paul and Leo. And we might, you know, mix it up from time to time, too.
Yeah.
I told my team, it's a delicate ecosystem.
That's right.
We don't want to push Paul over the edge.
Yeah. I am an emotional wreck.
well, would you like to talk about that, Mr. Thurrott, or
being an emotional wreck?
We only have 50 minutes, so let's
sure.
Let's get right to the matter at hand, which is Windows 11.
Yeah,
which is weird because I think Microsoft pushed as hard as it could to get Windows 11 onto every desktop, and it ain't quite
It's not even close. Yeah. So I have my own theories about this. I think it's important to kind of say up front, because naturally, if you criticize Microsoft for some strategy, or if you criticize the product because it's lacking in some way, the natural response to that is to say, well, what would you do? Like, how would you fix it? And I honestly, I don't know that it needs to be fixed. I don't know that there's anything anyone could do to make Windows 11 or just Windows like a smash, you know, success these days. I think this is the reality of the world, you know, but I think Microsoft went too far in one direction with Windows 10 with regards to everyone's getting it. We're going to be on one version of Windows, you know. It was really like 8 different versions of Windows because they revved it twice every year. And then they did that for too long. And I think the PC makers kind of came to Microsoft and said, guys, are we ever going to do something exciting here? Because we don't have anything to sell. And I think that's where Windows 11 came out of. Timing was interesting. It happened right at the end of, you know, I know it's not really over, but the end of the pandemic, so to speak. There was a pandemic era buying spree that would have happened regardless of any version of Windows, and did. And that was always going to end. And I don't know that rushing Windows 11 out the door was the right thing to do at that time. If they had waited a year, had a more mature product, it would have been in better shape. Would that have changed the market? But how would how would that have changed things, really?
So you feel like they were trying to jump on, and we talked about this, the pending decline of Windows PC sales by offering something new to get people buy. You saw this morning, I thought a really kind of genuine letter from Mark Zuckerberg. Meta is now laying off 11,000 people. And to his credit, he took responsibility for something that I think has been the case all through. I think the markets are showing it, Windows is showing it, which is that the pandemic artificially boosted, in Meta's case, boosted traffic, in Windows' case, boosted sales, and then people thought, oh, that's going to continue.
That's crazy, though. That's the thing that bugs me. In other words, these tech giants, these giants of industry, these geniuses, these tech geniuses, apparently all thought this was just going to happen forever. It should bother anyone who follows companies like Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Facebook, Meta, whatever, that these people are that clueless, because they all suffered from the exact same problem. There was this pandemic era rush. The worst thing that's happened to the planet in the worst last 100 years was the best thing that's ever happened to big tech. And it seemingly no one understood this was temporary. The thing that bugs me the most about this is Amy Hood at Microsoft, because I follow Microsoft, came out about a year ago and said, we didn't realize how important Windows was. We're going to...
Wow.
What?
what a shock. So,
I mean, that's crazy to me. I look.
It's pretty funny.
It's sad is what it is. You know, Mark Zuckerberg admitting like we went too far, we pushed too hard. You're going to hear this from a lot of tech CEOs, some version of it, you know. Yeah, right. And obviously, and how did you not see this coming?
Right.
Now, I don't know if everyone thought the floor was going to fall out, but I always look at things like, Windows usage or PC sales, up, down, whatever. You know, what is this thing going to look like? I talk about this kind of new normal or a plateauing, like PC sales were falling for a while. They kind of rose a little bit. That, you know, where do we settle? And we're in a position now where what is good news to big tech is, yeah, things are down, but they're still better than before the pandemic.
Yeah.
This is like the thing we're saying.
Well,
right,
that's
now.
Also the message to Wall Street, which isn't getting it either.
Right.
Last week, we were talking with Philip Elmer DeWitt about all the tech stocks doing so poorly while Apple did so well. And I pulled up graphs for, you know, Meta, Google. Mm-hmm. Well, Meta's a bad example. Meta's never coming back. But Google, right. Apple, Netflix, all the big tech companies, Amazon, and they are still ahead of where they were in January 2020. They're just not where they were in July 2020. And
well, but the question's going to be, does this slide continue, right? I mean, in other words, is there a point where we're not ahead of before the pandemic?
That's a good point. And that's the stock market. You know, do you think in terms of sales, that's where we're headed?
No, I'm just asking the question. I don't because I've been looking at this stuff for so long, I viewed the pandemic era buying spree for what it was, a temporary, I wrote about this. It's a temporary surge. You know, it was shocking to me. I'll just use Microsoft as the one example because that's, you know, again, the company I really follow the most. For them to come out and say what they said about Windows was the most clueless, should have set off warning signals at Wall Street that these people have no, who are in charge have no idea what they're talking about. It's crazy to me that those kinds of words came out of people's mouths. And now I worry there's going to be an overreaction in the opposite direction. It's like, oh, well, like, you know, we tried with Windows 11. I guess screw it. Nothing we do matters anyway. So things are going south. And I think there's a balance to be had kind of in the middle, which is kind of where I land on all things, really. And I think the pandemic was extreme. I think what's going to happen now is extreme. I think both these things are temporary. And then we have to just see where we land on the other side of it. I do think it's going to be about as good as it was before, or even a little better, depending on what market, what product, whatever.
Yeah.
The Windows 11 one is confusing to me because with Windows 10, they opened it up to everybody. And granted, the situation was so different. We were coming off Windows 8X. It was terrible. Everyone wanted off. They look, we fixed all the problems. PC-centric, desktop-centric, laptop-centric, not, you know, touch device that nobody has centric. And people kind of ate it up. They got caught up in that. There was some bad dealings on Terry Myerson's part where they started counting VM installs. They were trying to get to that magic 1 billion number really fast, whatever. But they overcompensated, I would say, in one direction. It's clear to me with Windows 11, they're overcompensating in the opposite direction. So when they did what they did with Windows 10, it was very customer focused. I mean, it's free. There you go. It's free. It runs on everything you have. The hardware requirements haven't changed. Everything's great. With Windows 11, it's really, this was done for the PC market. This doesn't benefit customers at all.
To help PC makers, OEMs.
PC makers. Yeah, that's right. Because they artificially cut off devices that could upgrade on a certain generation of processors, which, granted, to give Microsoft some credit, if we look out to the expiration date of Windows 10 and we think about how old the newest unsupported processor is, we're looking at roughly, I think it's 7 or 8 years off the top of my head. It's a reasonable time frame, honestly, for a generation of PCs. But the problem is they're doing it now. And right. So there are PCs right now that could run this thing easily. It's a simple cumulative update. It's no bigger or smaller than any Windows 10 update. This is something everyone could be on. It also kind of raises the issue, what's going to happen in 2 or 3 years when Windows 10 goes out to pasture? Are they going to do something like they did with Windows XP or with Windows 7, where they extended the support lifecycle for businesses only that were going to pay extra for that? And I mean, honestly, I could, if the story is, well, okay, but can we take these existing computers and just put them on Windows 11? And Microsoft says, no, you can't do that. We have very strict hardware requirements, then we're not upgrading.
Yeah, that's going to
get into an interesting. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation. So this was, you know, this was a strategy of Microsoft's making. They did what they did. It was their choice. I think the hardware requirements are largely artificial. I just invented this out of whole cloth this morning, but I was talking about this morning, and it occurred to me that one way Microsoft could get around this 3 years down the road is to say, look, we're going to ease the hardware requirements, but we're only going to do it for businesses that are managed, that have centralized security solutions, because we know you guys are going to do the right thing with that stuff and protect all of the users. We can't do it for people because we can't trust people to update their computers and be up to date with security and stuff because they just don't do that. But if you're a managed environment, you know, maybe that's the way, because that's going to be the big customer base that in a few years is still on 6th, maybe 7th gen processors, you know, would go to Windows 11, but do not want to upgrade their computers yet. You know, they might need a few more years. So we'll see. But you can see the result of what Microsoft did in the usage chart. So StatCounter just came out with their monthly chart. They looked at, you know, how many computers have Windows 11 versus 10 versus 7 versus other operating systems. I just looked at Windows, but, you know, Windows 11 a year in is only on about 15% of all Windows PCs. And that's a gain of 6-ish percentage points over 6 months. What? Like, that's not very much. Even if you just look at new PC sales, you might think this should be higher than it is. And I think this what this says in many ways is that businesses are sticking with Windows 10 because they're probably getting new computers and they have the right with their license to install the version they want. And I bet the version they want is Windows 10.
Oh, that's interesting. So a consumer, because they're just going to get what they get, I would say any new PC is probably sold with 11. Certainly this one, the Dell was.
Yeah. Yep.
Businesses aren't in that situation if they have an enterprise license. They get to choose.
That's right. They can do whatever they want.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah.
That's my theory. If you look at Windows sales over the past year have been pretty good. I mean, obviously this year they're slowing down dramatically, but just from this first half year alone, I mean, you think you'd see a little more movement on Windows 11 usage, mm-hmm. but it's pretty low. I mean, Windows 7, for example, has almost 10% usage share. That has to be not 100%, but a lot of that has to be those people in the extended support program who are paying, right? And that's running out, I think, in January, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll see what happens there. But the other thing, too, though, is if you look at usage over time, Windows 10 usage has been pretty consistent over 6 months, 73% to 71%, you know, not much of a change. A lot of the growth that we've seen for Windows 11, such as it is, has come from other versions of Windows, not from Windows 10. Windows 10 has been kind of just gliding. I think we're going to have another Windows 7 situation on our hands, basically.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's curious.
Yeah. You also raise that interesting specter of what happens when in 2025
October Windows 2025
10 rolls out the end of the line.
Well, that's the thing to think about. So if you go back and look it up, I don't remember the date off the top of my head, but the last unsupported chipset generation, just looking at Intel, it was 7th gen, right? So 7th gen chips, by the time October 2025 runs around, I believe will be somewhere in the eight, nine years old, something like that. I probably have it in the article, so I don't remember the exact number. But for an individual, that's a reasonable amount of time. In other words, you bought a 7th gen PC, like the last day they were available, used that thing for 7 to 10 years. That's a long time, right? I mean, it's reasonable to think that if you're going to get another, if you're going to keep using a PC, you'll buy a new PC at that point. That's reasonable. In a business, it's on the edge of reasonable, right? I mean, they're definitely on a much slower upgrade cycle. And I know just because we talk to these people all the time, like nobody's interested in following Microsoft's cute little schedule, right? They want to do their thing on their own schedule. Yeah. So. We'll see. I will see what happens.
We got new machines, new Dell power stations for the editors. I think we put 11 on it.
And they were on 8 before, weren't they? On 8.1 or something like that?
Yeah, well, that's what businesses do, right? They're not. Yeah. Yep. We didn't want to. We had a nice, stable thing. Right. And we were, you know, as enterprise users, we had whatever that, it's not Intune, whatever that subscription is that keeps you up to date and all that. You know,
but that's
there's no reason to change.
That's the mentality. I think for a lot of people listening to this, and for me too, right? The mentality is, hey, this thing's working great. Let's screw with it. You know, whereas you know that's not how businesses react. It's like this thing's working great. Leave it alone.
Yeah. That's not really what business. That's not what our company wants. You know. It's an ecosystem, and once everything's working fine. And I think Microsoft must know that. I don't understand why they act differently.
Absolutely know this.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not taking their side, but just to thinking about some of the things they've done and some of the things they've said. One of the things you'll hear from Microsoft, which is accurate, you know, they'll talk to businesses and say, "Look, upgrading to Windows 10, 11 rather from 10, technically is no more difficult, no more unreliable, no more scary or weird or different than." Upgrading from Windows 10 version, you know, 21H1 to 21H2 or whatever, make up any versions you want. It's not that big of a deal. And that is something that has changed a lot. If you think, you know, the upgrade from Windows XP to Windows 7 or the upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10, completely different story. But this time, because of the one little thing that has come out of Windows as a service in 6 years of Windows 10 has been they have kind of gotten that down. And so there are still big, giant feature updates that can come down the pipe, and they could be, you know, disruptive and all that stuff. But Windows 11, it's basically a cumulative update. I mean, I know it changes the UI. It makes the things different and stuff like that. But technically, you know, what's happening to the computer is not that complex. Like, it's not that unreliable. It's not something you have to be worried about. And they kind of go to businesses with that and say, look, it's not a big deal. Except that businesses don't necessarily want to change the UI of a system and have to retrain people. There are still some software compatibility concerns, although I think those two, I think, are minor these days compared to how they were in the past. I don't know. There's a reality out there, but there's also this mentality out there. And I think with businesses, they just, it's like, yeah, you know, we've heard the story before. We're good. You know, we're going to stick with what we have. And I don't know how you get around that. And it doesn't help that they made it very difficult to qualify for it. I mean, you have to have very recent hardware for that to even make sense.
Yeah. Interesting. We live in interesting times. I'm happy with Windows 11. I mean,
I am too.
Yeah. It's not, there's nothing wrong with Windows 11. Nobody's saying that.
Well,
it's just, it's not the same old thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe it's just because of the lifetime.
Actually, you were saying that, weren't you?
Wait. Yeah, no, there are things. I was going to say,
Let me not put words into your mouth. You were saying that. But it's not, you know, you said it would have been better had they baked it a little longer.
Yeah, I think if they had just waited a year,
yeah,
that would have done it. They rushed that thing right out the door with very little testing, and none of the testing influenced the first version. It's shocking how little the product has changed year over year. But then again, you know, there was, we're going to talk about this, October/November update that just came out for everybody. And they, you know, to give Microsoft a little bit of credit, they did throw out a little, you know, gimme for everyone. You've been complaining about the taskbar, task manager thing. We barely tested it, but we're going to put it in anyway, because we know you want it. You've been complaining. And that's nice. You know, that checks one of the little boxes that I think people had. I don't know. I think it's fine. To me, all upgrades need to be tested against going back to the old version and seeing if you miss anything. And Windows 10, to me, just feels kind of old-fashioned now, which is a weird thing to say. But I think Windows 7 survives the upgrade test, I guess, if that makes sense, just from a usability perspective.
Yeah.
Or a look and feel perspective.
Yeah.
It's nice.
I, you know, it's stable enough, and I'm on the, as we know, stuck apparently on the release, the release beta, but it's been fine.
Well, actually, that's a good point. So did you, patch Tuesday was yesterday.
Oh, should I check?
You should absolutely check. You're going to have some big updates in there.
See if the,
one of them is going to be like a KB, it's like a 199802 or something like that. Actually, let's look up the exact number. It's a KB501-9980, sorry.
Yeah.
That will be, we're calling this different things, but it's sort of the October/November update. So last month, there was a preview version of it that you could get if you were seeking it. This month, everyone's going to get it eventually, automatically, but you could seek and get it today. And this will bring those additional features into the product that were promised for 22H2, but were delivered a little bit later because Microsoft, I don't know.
It must have happened overnight, because all I got is a Intel Bluetooth update.
Okay.
Your device is still set up to get insider builds.
But do this, run WinVir, like Windows key R,
and
then WinVir.
It does say I'm queued for unenrollment, but it said that forever. I'm on build 22623.885 22H2.
885.
Yeah.
What is,
you never even heard of that one.
I don't even know what that. Oh, because you're a little bit ahead. Yeah, because the current stable build is 819.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. I'm on this.
See, I don't know how you're ever going to get out of this. It's so terrible what they're doing with this. What's the primary build number? Is it 22621 or
623?
623. Okay. Yeah, because the beta channel has versions that people are getting features and people are not getting features.
I'm getting the release preview builds. That's the one. Right. I'm not on the fast ring. I'm on a whatever. I'm on the, what they call the beta channel now.
The beta channel.
Which, by the way, it says recommended next to it.
Sure. Sure. It is sort of a one-way dead-end street, but you'll like it. It's a nice little cul-de-sac.
You head down this cul-de-sac. So we always talk about this window, you know, the window that closes and so forth. This is not, it's not ever going to, I'm going to always stay here. Is that?
I feel like they have to address this. So, you know, we keep pushing off the, when's the time, right? So Windows 11 22H2 is going to come out or did come out. Surely this will be the time. Nope. Okay.
Nope.
Hold on. There's extra features. October, November. All right. October, their peaches are out.
Yeah.
Nope. Okay.
Nope. Okay.
All right. Hold on. November. Everyone's getting them in November. Surely this will be the time. Every week I look for some missive from the Insider program saying, okay, guys, it's magic window time. They'll never call it that. But if you want to start jumping ship from different channels and maybe get back on stable, which is what you want, this is the time to do that. But I don't know what they're doing.
Anthony Nielsen, who's in the process of getting these new edit stations all running, says when asked by Adam the Phantom in our Discord, do the editors like it? He says there are some annoying file explorer quirks. And there were some pretty big annoyances with it, but I figured out workarounds mostly. I think you've been talking about those the file explorer differences.
Yeah, so I had to re-record an episode of Hands on Windows where there was some kind of a glitch with the original recording.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay, but this stuff is just frozen in my brain now. So it is a goofy fact that there were three different versions of File Explorer that have appeared in Windows 11. In 1 year.
Oh, man.
There's the version that shipped with the original version of Windows 11. There's the version that shipped with 22H2. And then there's the version that just shipped with this October/November update. And that last version is the one, everyone thinks of it as the tabs update because it adds tabs. But actually, there are two other major updates that occurred, UI updates that occurred with this release. And I don't feel like anyone understands what's going on. And it's a very hard thing to explain, but in the default view of File Explorer, the home page, as they call it, which is a ridiculous name, has three sections now. There's a quick access section, which is typically those folders that we used to think of as system folders, desktop, downloads, documents, pictures, music, and videos, right? It's dynamic. So as you use your system, it will see, like, you're going into screenshots a lot. We're going to add screenshots to quick access. And quick access appears on the home page, but it also appears in this navigation panel on the side. Now, people like me who overthink things, I don't want this default view. So I customize it and I get rid of all the folders I don't need. And when I delete those, they delete them from quick access, and that means they're gone from the home page, if you will, in File Explorer, but they're also gone from the navigation pane. I've already lost 99% of people listening to this because it's very hard to explain. But in the old days, like, so for example, I'll just give a concrete example. I access the pictures folder from time to time, but not every day. So I don't want it there all the time. It's just taking up space. And in the old days, and by the old days, I mean before like 3 weeks ago, I could go to the My PC view and you would see those system folders above your drives, right? Meaning desktop, pictures, music, documents, video, whatever else. Downloads, I think, was one. So in other words, if I got rid of them from QuickView, no problem. They were still available in File Explorer. Well, that's not true anymore. So in 22H2 plus the November update, those things are gone. They're just gone. They don't show them anymore. So if I get rid of pictures, which is the example that I use because this happens to me, all of a sudden, there's no way to easily access the pictures folder in File Explorer because I removed it from quick access and those folders no longer appear in this PC. So there's a workaround. The workaround is from home or from this PC, you can click, there's an up arrow button now, right, to go up, navigate up into the folder hierarchy. When you do that, you actually see it's a view of your desktop that has all of those folders. desktop, documents, downloads, music, pictures, videos, as well as some other stuff. And then you can get to it that way. So I know how to do that. But it's, you know, but it's just like it's an extra step. Like it's just like it's like a weird, it's a very hard thing to describe with words. Hopefully in the hands-on window video, I show it. So hopefully you can make, you know, that will make a little more sense to people. But it's these little differences that they just don't make sense. Like they don't, like it's not better. It's just different.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, everybody should watch Hands on Windows. You have to be a member of Club Twit to do that. Or you could buy it for $2.99 a month. $7 a month gets you Club Twit and all of the benefits thereof, including Hands on Windows, Hands on Mac, ad-free versions of all our shows, the Discord, all that stuff. So,
right.
I think Hands on Windows alone is worth it, worth the price of admission.
Well, I'm not going to make that claim, but I do think Club Twit is a good deal. I think it's a good program. Certainly, I would pay for all of it because there's so much more there. But this is a weird one. Like this File Explorer thing I've been talking about is not something that's in the book because the book is just like, look, this is File Explorer.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to go through the history of File Explorer. No. It doesn't matter what it was.
Except
this
that,
is what it is.
Aren't there
this
users, though, in different states?
Yeah, there are. And actually, this is a huge problem.
Yeah.
So I you're waiting for that window where you can take your beta channel PC and get back to stable, which is completely reasonable. And the UI says will be possible. I am waiting for a day where we're all in the same build number. And I mean stable, like people in stable. And we all see the same features. But actually, that's not the case.
Which makes it hard for you.
It's very hard. So for the computer I'm using right now, for example, I'm going to just jump ahead a bit because this is this brought this up.
I've got the image right here.
Yeah, so I took a picture of this. So this, listen, I have 22H2 plus the November update on possibly a dozen computers.
Yeah.
On one of them, this one, the one I'm using right now, the search button looks different.
It has a, it's not, the word search.
Yeah. So it's not, it's not in the Insider program. It's just,
well, it must be, it's an A-B test, right? I mean.
But why would you be doing that with stable?
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. Also, we talked about this, I think, last week. You know, generally speaking, I tell people, you know, you've got all these taskbar buttons. You can get rid of all of them because, you know, the if you know the keyboard shortcuts, you don't need them taking up space in your taskbar. But there are actually some exceptions to that. One of them is the task view because you can mouse over that and get your desktop's UI, the virtual desktops thing, which is nice. If you don't have that button there, that goes away.
Hmm.
Well, one of the nice things about search, not that I think anyone should use this thing, but if you're using search in Windows, if you actually use the thing, you can mouse over that and what you'll see is previous searches. That can be handy, right? You did a search for something. I need to go find that thing again. It's in the pop-up. That's nice. Well, on this computer, with the new search button, that top pop-up does not appear. So it looks different and it does less. I don't know. I have no idea why.
It's a mystery.
I should be institutionalized. I really stress over this stuff. I spend a lot of time trying to figure out what's happening.
It is kind of your business, your chosen.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. Right.
I don't blame you. Like I said, it must be difficult to write about it because you don't want four different versions of this of the task.
I can tell you what I never want to write the following words. When you click on this button, the following may happen.
May happen. Yeah.
No.
Nothing in computers should be a may happen. It's a deterministic system.
If you're lucky, you may see this window. No. No, 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 no. So it's possible that this search button is just a mistake. Maybe it goes away over time. Maybe it becomes this over time. I don't know. I would hate for them to change the search icon in the taskbar because I would have to fix approximately 1,000 screenshots so far, right?
Well, as you know,
it's there all the time.
I am living in the future, and I don't see it. So
there you go. So you have search on your taskbar, but it's a little magnifying glass.
It's just a magnifying glass with nothing else. You have the magnifying glass with some text in a...
And so if you mouse over that, you'll see the little pop-up I was talking about, I would imagine.
Yes, select here to search, there and then go. I see the most recent things I've opened. Which yep. is which no, is
I don't
nice.
See that on mine. Right. So I don't
see. What do you see when you hover over it?
Nothing. It doesn't do anything. It's the only button on the taskbar that doesn't do anything.
Oh, that's frustrating. Because that's actually useful.
Yep. It's like when you have like a wisdom tooth comes in, but it grows in next to your tooth. And you're like, what is this extra thing? I don't know. What is it doing? Nothing. It's just in the way.
I think you're going to need some oral surgery on your windows.
Yeah. A root canal is what I need for sure. Just real quick, I did want to step through the new features.
KB 5199.80.
Yeah. And actually, here's something. I don't know if you can do this on screen. You could try this. This is kind of interesting.
I can't for some reason right now.
Oh, you don't have. Oh.
I have my Windows machine, and I have an HDMI switcher. And this is one of we were talking before the show how these little paper cuts, these minor annoyances add up. So half the time I can pull up my Windows screen. Half the time it's just blank. And I don't know. I've just replugged and unplugged everything and I can't get it working.
Okay. That's okay. Well, this is an exercise for the... No, it's fine. People could try this. Everyone knows File Explorer tabs, the big thing. Like I mentioned, new home screen, new navigation pane. That stuff has changed too. I think that's a bigger deal. A couple of minor things that change. Taskbar overflow, which you'll only see if you have, 50 icons on your taskbar. I don't think that's a particularly big deal, but it has a kind of a Windows 11 look and feel. Okay, fine. I call these subtle improvements to Nearby Share because they're so subtle I can't find them. But I believe what it means is if you use Nearby Share, which, by the way, I use every day and recommend strongly. It's a great feature. I use it because I take screenshots on one PC and need to get them over to the PC that I'm building the book on or whatever. That's a way to share files between computers on the same network. It works over Bluetooth or over Wi-Fi. Obviously, Wi-Fi is bigger distance and better performance. And it's just a good feature. It's a nice little feature. I don't think anyone really knows about it. It's in Windows 10. It's in Windows 11. You have to turn it on to use it, et cetera, et cetera. Supposedly, that can find more PCs, more devices that are compatible with it. These are all PCs. I don't know why they keep calling the devices, but... I've seen no difference, but that's one. The one you can see, and this is an extremely minor feature, but there's something called suggested actions. And so if you go into a document creation app of any kind, like Notepad works fine, and you type a phone number or you type a date or a time, and then you select that thing and copy it to the clipboard, you'll see a new pop-up comes up and it's, a nice little Windows UI. A Windows 11 style UI. And if it's a phone number, what it will do is offer to call that number using a calling app on your phone.
Nice.
So that could be Skype or whatever apps you
That's
have.
That's nice.
Yeah. And if it's a date or time, one of the options will be, start a new meeting or a new event on that day or time.
Content aware clipboard, I'll call that.
There you go. And it is extremely limited because it's literally phone numbers, dates, and times. That's the whole, that's the extent of it. So it's the first release. I mean, maybe it will expand over time, but. It's nice. It reminds me a little bit of not quick actions. There used to be a thing in Office. God, this goes back to 2003 or 2007. There was a quick action. I forget the name of it, but there was a thing like this. You could select text, right click, and it would pop up this new style of menu. And it's sort of like that, but it's system wide and not Office specific, and it's limited, but. Those are pretty much the new features. And I think that kind of rounds out the 22H2 feature set for now. We're going to have, future moment updates. But for now, for today, I would say for this year, that's probably where we're going to be at. Except for the stupid search button, which, still trying to figure that one out.
That's so strange. Do you think somebody bizarre. Back at the home office is saying, hey, it's Thurrotz, let's
screw exactly. it. Let's flip the switch. Screw it his brain.
Yeah. That's hysterical.
I think if people knew how much I yelled at computers, they would be worried about me.
Maybe the computers know. Maybe that's why they're harassing you. Did you ever think of that?
Yep. I just want stuff to work. I think it's reasonable to want things to work,
Well, and like I said, you've got a much bigger dog in this hunt. A normal person wouldn't even know that they don't have the usual taskbar. Right. But as an author, you've got to document it. And then you come on this show and it's different and I've got it different and it's very frustrating.
Freaks
and
me out.
Honestly, you lost functionality because the ability to hover over it and see your three previous searches is very
a
handy.
Reason to have that thing be there.
Yes.
it's because otherwise just get rid of it. There's no reason for it to be there. You can bring up search with a keyboard shortcut. You can get to search from start. You don't. There's no reason for that thing to be there. Actually, I think the little pop-up's kind of a nice feature.
It
if
is.
You use Windows Search.
I didn't know about it until you told me about it a couple of weeks ago. But,
yeah.
But it is. I always hit, you know, I do Windows key and type the first few letters. That's always what I do.
Right.
But it's nice to know if I'm going to go back. Like, I just, remember, I just did my my settings. So if I want to go back and check Windows updates again, it's right there because I just did it.
I'm so compulsive. I close things reflexively, like without even thinking about it. So I'll open a browser tab. I'll make a search. Okay, good. And then I go, and then I close it. I go do something. I'm like, wait, I go, it's gone.
Yeah.
Or the window was gone in the exact location that some file is at. And I got to go retrace those steps. Like, I do this all the time. And so, I know I do it and I can't stop it.
Just looking at the updates that I got yesterday, I guess. Must have been in the middle of the night. Is that normal if you don't seek it, that Tuesday updates just happen?
Not the day one. But also, you're on beta, so you might not be getting the same. Right. Yeah. So after you installed the Bluetooth update, and did that conclude? I mean,
that was it. Now I have everything I did,
I have everything.
So I think overnight it must have done it. Well, I'm looking for 9980. I don't see 9980, but I guess I wouldn't get that because I'm in the...
Yeah. So when you right-click on the taskbar, do you have an option for Task Manager?
Yeah, I've had that for a while, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And we'll try it. Well, just try this then. Bring up Notepad. Type in...
Wow, I haven't done that in a while. Okay. You're trying to turn me into Mary Jo, aren't you? You just missed her that bad. Okay, got Notepad open. Yep.
As you'll notice, it's a feature-rich application, Leo.
It's dark mode. I like that.
Yeah, I do too, actually. So type in a phone number.
Okay. Oh, yeah,
And then select that phone number and right-click.
Oh, yeah, good idea. Let's try this here that you just mentioned. So copy it?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, copy it.
It doesn't say anything about being a phone number now. Now, how do I... Oh, now it says call number.
There you go. That's suggested.
That's a pop-up over it. There's three dots to the right of that, and I can go to clipboard settings to turn this off. So I have to copy it on the clipboard, but then it pops up. That's a little weird. Like, it didn't know it was a phone number until I copied it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, of course, I don't have a phone app, so it's not doing anything. That's the other weird thing, because I do have apps that could dial out on this machine, but it wants to have your phone do it, right?
No, it will work with an app on your computer, but it probably has to be compatible with whatever this... It should.
Oh, wait a minute. Honestly, something launched. Wait a minute. What launched?
It should just come up. It should come up, honestly.
Yeah.
Teams might come up.
Make and receive calls from your PC. Just connect your phone with this PC to start dialing.
Or
didn't we do this? Or didn't I do this last week? Okay. This is the your phone. Man.
We're going to have, in a very special episode of Windows Weekly, Leo is going to pave his computer.
Again and again.
Yep.
All right. Anyway, so yeah, had I had that all set up, which it looks like I do, because I see my messages.
Oh, then you should be able to call right from
there. Yeah, you would think, and I see my photos. Mm-hmm. Calls are still getting set up. You may be asked to turn on Bluetooth discovery permission from your phone. Ah, okay, let's see. Yes, we need some permissions. And this is on a Pixel 7. This is not on a Snampung. I like my Snamhung. Okay. Sure. I gave my daughter my Snamhung. So now it's just spinning. That's what happened last time.
Yeah.
The long spin.
Okay. Well, you get the theory.
I get the idea. It is a little weird because there are a lot of apps on that other platform that will just say, oh, that's a phone number. And give you the option to click it. It's weird that I have to copy it on my clipboard, and then the clipboard does that work.
Yeah.
And now I have a highlight, a pop-up.
That's right. Yeah. No, I... it took me a while to figure out that's what it was, because I kept thinking I didn't have this feature. Right. Where is it? And it's because I wasn't
copying it. Yeah.
Right. Yep.
All right. While I do the long spin, should we do an ad? Would that be... you finished this, right? Did you want to talk about...
Yeah, actually, let me just wind down the whole Windows thing.
Oh, there are some new features. Okay, yeah, sir. Sorry.
These are new features you have because you're in the beta channel. So Issued two new builds. I think this was late last week. Yeah. I don't think any of these are, well, actually, you could look at the widgets one. So the big one is way back June 2021, Microsoft first showed off Windows 11. One of the things they showed off was widgets full screen. So that feature is now in testing in the beta channel. And you can, they call it expanded view. It's basically full screen. So basically you have a little icon up in the corner that will make it go boop, you know, kind of out, and then you can bring it back. And however you configure it, it will remember that. So the next time you open widgets, it will be in the state. Yeah, that's if you want to use widgets.
Yeah.
My battery and power settings has a new energy recommendations option, so you can configure your PC for best energy efficiency. This is rarely what I want when I'm using a computer. Mostly because when I do this, I have performance issues, but, you know, whatever. I appreciate Microsoft going in that direction. And then quick settings, which honestly is one of my favorite features in Windows 11, which is that thing you get when you click the network sound or power icon in the lower corner there. It's very similar to a feature in Chrome OS. Actually, it's very similar in a feature to Mac OS as well. Gives you some little quick setting buttons.
Yes.
Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, et cetera. If you have a computer with a neural processing unit, which you don't, by the way, but if you do, you can add a Windows Studio Effects button to this that will give you access to those features that you get with an MPU. Background blur, eye contact, automatic framing, and voice focus.
Do you have to have a Surface to do this?
I think you have to have a Qualcomm-based PC right now. So it has to have one of those.
The new Surfaces are that.
The new Surface has it. And I think if you would just have a Qualcomm, whatever the new chipset is called, 8 series, version 3, whatever it is, whatever the new Qualcomm chip is for PCs, I think that will work.
Cool.
As well. But it might, yeah, maybe just the new Surface. So that's it.
I wish I could show this. I'm so sorry. I got to figure out what's.
So you got the, did you get the widgets thing to work?
So I turn widgets back on because I turned them off in the lower right hand left hand corner. So I open it, okay. But I don't see it just looks like the normal widgets menu. I don't see anywhere to change that.
So in the upper right corner, there should
a picture
be like
of me
a little...
and a plus sign is all. Oh, settings.
Yeah, no. No. Oh, that's interesting. No,
I think I don't have that.
It should be. Let me look.
I wish I could show you. Like.
It is a. Well, I have a screenshot of it, but it's there's a plus sign and then there's a little. It's like arrow. You know, like a expanding arrow kind of thing. So you don't see that.
No, I don't. I'm looking at your. Now I'm looking at your article about this. Let me put.
It's like an expand contract. You know, the icon will change.
I don't have that.
Okay. Well, actually, I can explain that. This is the Windows Insider program, Leo, and these features are not going out to all testers at the same time.
Yeah, so that's what you're talking about this expand contract thing. I have the plus, right. I have my head, but I don't have that.
It's not, no, that's why they're.
I didn't
they're
get it.
Metering it out. Yeah, they're metering it out. So you'll get it eventually.
Yeah. Oh shoot. Okay. Yeah. Okay, three new features that I will get eventually.
That's right. As will the rest of us, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, we'll all get it someday.
Someday.
All right, let's take a little break. Come back. Lots more to talk about. Have you ever... we have a new sponsor called Rocket Money. Did you ever use Truebill back in the day? I was a Truebill user forever. So when Rocket bought it and turned it into Rocket Money, I got it automatically, and I've been using it ever since. So Truebill... has been for a long time the way that you would find subscriptions long forgotten that still come out of your bank account every month and cancel them automatically. Rocket Money is formerly Truebill and does that and more. It's actually, they've made it even better. I know you're wasting money on subscriptions. You know it too, right? We all have in the back of our mind. I bet I have some, you know, monthly things that I've forgotten about. 80% of people have subscriptions they forget about. Maybe it's for you. Maybe it's for a family member. That's part of the problem, right? Maybe it's an unused Amazon Prime account or a Hulu that you never watch. Maybe you know you have it, but just, you know, you forget to, you just let it drag on. This is the best app for tracking expenses, for budgeting, for seeing my net worth is, but most importantly, for getting rid of subscriptions. And this is an app that saves you money. I no longer waste money on subscriptions I don't even use. I found, in fact, this is a good time to do this, political campaign subscriptions that have been going on way longer than I meant them to. They don't stop them automatically, but Rocket Money will. It's called Rocket Money. Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Most Americans, if you ask them, and they did a survey, think they spend about $80 a month on subscriptions. That's a lot, but actually the true number, closer to $200 or more. You could be wasting hundreds of dollars every month on subscriptions you don't know about. We're all in this boat, but this is the solution, Rocket Money. It shows you all your subscriptions in one place, cancels the subscriptions you don't want anymore. It can even find subscriptions you didn't know you were paying for. Or, and this is not unusual, I wish it were, subscriptions you're getting double billed for. Oy. I think Rocket Money is the greatest darn thing ever. I'm a big fan. I've got it on my phone. I have forever. I love the recurring button so I can see what's upcoming. I can see all my recurring subscriptions. But you can also see net worth. You can see spending. You really, everything is in here. Apparently, I have earned $0 this month. So that's good. But the best thing to me, I love canceling the subscriptions. All you have to do is find the subscription you don't want anymore. Is this a subscription? Amazon Digital Services? Yes, it's a subscription. Amazon Prime Video? Yeah. Sometimes it says, is that a subscription? You say yes. That is not a subscription. Okay, so I can look and let's say, you know, I really don't want to pay for this anymore, right? I'm done. Well, I can just cancel it. I can just say, press the cancel button, and it's over. It's over. It is over. It's over. See that? Cancel. Or you can remove it if you don't want to be bugged about it, that kind of thing. I just love this. Rocket Money, formerly known as Truebill. It was kind of cool because I've been a Truebill user forever and a day. And so all of a sudden one day it just turned into Rocket Money. And I said, "Woo, this is great." I continued my Rocket Money subscription. It's great. They have a pro version. You get rid of useless subscriptions with Rocket Money. Try it right now. Just go to rocketmoney.com/windows. Seriously, it could save you hundreds a year. It's so great. rocketmoney.com/windows. Please use that /windows thing there so they know you saw it here. So Paul gets credit. Cancel your unnecessary subscriptions right now. Everybody should have this on their phone. rocketmoney.com/windows. You'll find lots of other great uses for it too. Thank you, Rocket. Now we continue on with little Pauly Thurrott. And we're going to go to Microsoft 365, a.k.a. Office.
Yeah. Yep.
This is the stuff Mary Jo Foley would do for you. But no, you've got to do it, Pauly. You got to do it yourself. There's no help
for
you.
I can do it.
You can do it. I know you can. I believe in you.
I like Microsoft 365.
I am a subscriber. It's funny, I had a caller on the radio show, was using... What was it? Office 2006.
Oh, jeez.
And she said she was using it on a Mac. She said, Apple says I can't use it anymore. I said, yeah, because it's 32-bit.
Right.
It was out of date 10 years ago, lady. She says, well, what would I do? I said, subscribe. It's $8 a month. She said, oh, I don't want to subscribe. I said, it's $8 a month. That's yeah. In fact, you can get it for, I think, $70 for a year. So it's even less.
Yep. You can buy it.
In fact, I found somewhere where you could buy it cheap, which kind of worried me. Like maybe they're selling those cards and you get a new PC.
I know.
Something like that.
You should just tell it, like, buy it, and then I'll set my calendar for 10 years from now when you call me again because it won't run on the 128-bit Mac you now have.
Exactly. I think the subscription's worth it. I really do.
Yeah, I do too.
Anyway, I couldn't convince her. I told her about 80 different things she could do. Nothing made her happy, but that happens. You know, you get those calls.
Yeah. It works fine.
I actually told her, use the web office, and probably for her, that would have been plenty.
Right.
But she, no, I want Office on my computer. Old habits die hard. That's the truth.
Right.
So what's new in the Office world?
Well, first up,
I gave you some time.
as warned, Zoom has launched new mail and calendar clients.
Have you tried
that integrate? No, I'm going to. I'm intrigued by this kind of, I'm a sucker for this kind of thing.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why, but
this is why we suffer.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. If I just didn't care, everything would be fine. It looks interesting. Well, you know, I've done different, like you. I mean, you experiment with things and you try different ways of doing things and yeah. So, you know, Zoom, like anyone else in this space, and this space is what I would call kind of service-based communications. Google is in this space, Amazon, I would say all the messaging apps even. Facebook has, or Meta has aims on businesses as well with productivity software like this. So this is kind of a natural way to expand. I mean, Notion and is coming up with a calendar app. They bought a calendar service, and Canva is coming out with document creation apps. Everybody's doing it. Yeah. So, you know, Zoom is one of those companies that saw a great usage uptick during the pandemic. We were just talking about that, and they want to, you know, keep the ride going. So they're going to try to be a more full featured business service company, and so this is a big part of that. So it's, you know, this is not like an enterprise product, not yet anyway. It's small businesses, individuals at very small businesses and so forth. But
so you've used it though?
No, I've not.
You haven't?
I've not.
Oh, it's in a beta. It's in a beta right now.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. I'm surprised Amazon hasn't made a bigger push in this realm, honestly. They actually do have stuff like this, but nobody knows about it or uses it. But anyway, I think you're going to see a lot of this stuff in the days and weeks ahead or whatever. So there's that. For
Amazon,
people who...
Amazon's the place where software goes to die.
Okay, I was going to make a comment just like that. I wasn't sure what you were going to say. Yeah, exactly.
Because, they have all sorts of stuff you've never heard about.
Yep.
And including an office suite.
I know.
It's a complete Microsoft Office alternative combining 5+1 premium products, documents, sheets, slides, PDF editor, drive, and mail with calendar.
Mm-hmm. That's I used this term last night. I said, that's table stakes for this business, right?
$35 a year. It's actually not a bad deal.
Actually, that's pretty good. My wife didn't understand the term table stakes.
Oh, well, she's not a poker player, obviously. Obviously.
It's the minimum you have to put up to play.
Yes. Pay to play. Yeah. It's where you start. It looks pretty you know, it's so funny. It's from Mobi Systems.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. That's interesting.
I know.
I had no idea.
I know. Nobody does. Yeah. Nobody knows this exists, but it does.
I'm surprised they didn't have something like called Cricket, Amazon Cricket. It's I'm surprised. Yeah. So many little things.
It's productivity the Amazon way.
Yeah.
First, get a door and turn it into
a
table.
That's what I was thinking too.
You know, if you can think like that, you're going to love this product. But what about the doorknob? Don't worry about the doorknob.
Just yeah.
Yeah. Mm-mm. So, for closer to home,
Amazon, by the way, I just looked it up, does have something called Cricket.
Do they really?
Yeah. I don't know what it is. There you go. Oh, it's Crickets. Buy Crickets.
You got to be kidding me.
You can get Crickets. Freeze-dried insects or you can get Fluker's Orange Cube Complete Cricket Diet. So you can either feed crickets or feed crickets to something else. Both.
And there's different size crickets, and they're next to a ruler so you can see
how
big it
is. Yes, 1-inch large adult banded crickets.
This is when does it become a
$24
locust?
It's 10 cents each, so you do the math. 250 of them.
Mm-mm.
Why would you buy 200? You feed them to some animal. That's what it is. You feed it to your snake or something.
Jeez.
You know what? Get the 1,000 pack. It's only $40. It's a big savings.
Oh, man.
I wonder if they're alive.
I think these are dried out crickets like you would eat in Mexico.
God, I hope so.
Kind of like a
We only sell captive bred animals. So wild animals can stay wild. Josh's frogs. Have you ever been frustrated with dead crickets? We were always getting dead crickets. After years of shopping around, testing other species, and learning more about crickets, we found banded crickets. These crickets ship well all year long. Oh, they are live. They weren't dying when the temperature would spike a little bit or if it unexpectedly dropped.
You
feed it to your lizard. That's what it is.
I see. Yeah. You have like a turtle or something.
Bearded dragons, geckos, you got your chameleons, your large free toad, your Pac-Man frog, your yellow-spotted clamming toad, your giant waxy monkey tree frog, or your Malaysian horned frog. They all love them.
Huh. All right.
I had crickets in Mexico. We caught them ourselves in Oaxaca.
Sure. Caught them and ate them. Wow.
Well, you don't eat them alive. So we...
no, I understand. But you're at the chef's.
He has this
How big are these things?
Like as big as the first joint on your index finger.
Yeah, I was going to say smaller than the...
They're hard to catch because they're hoppity. But and he keeps them... So he kept them in his herb garden. Kept them. I think they could probably leave if they want. But they like the herbs. And he said, you know, this is good because they taste like the herbs they've been eating. So he said, you get some sage crickets and you get some thyme crickets. So we went out, we picked the crickets, put a little plastic bag. I have pictures. I'll show you someday. And then you bring it back. And then I think he, you know, they did this out of our view, but I think they probably knock him in the head with a tiny cricket hammer and then roast him.
Jeez.
I'm hoping.
You think they actually have a tiny cricket? I'm not an expert, Leo, but I think.
They're good. They put them in everything. They put them in the mole. Yeah, they put it on top of the. Sometimes you'll see them. Like, they're obviously crickets on top of the...
Like salad or food.
Yeah, they're good.
Have you had, like worm salt is also a thing?
I've had worm salt. Yes, sir.
You know?
Yes, sir. That is one thing my son, Salt Hank, will not sell, is worm salt. He sells every other kind of salt, but not worm salt.
Not worm salt. Well, you never know. Emerging markets. I'm just saying it's the...
You should.
It's He's the salt a bet. Of the future.
I'll talk to him about it.
Yep.
Microsoft is killing custom domains in Outlook. I saw this. Yeah. I saw this. I don't have one, but that's too bad. That's nice.
Yeah. I have my primary Microsoft account dates back to 2002. I believe I created this account to sign up with Xbox Live Gold to play Halo.
Oh, wow.
Even Halo 2, whatever. Yeah. It's that old. But it's a Hotmail account, right? Because that's what those accounts were back then. And so over the years, there have been various products that Microsoft had. At one point, it was called Windows Live Domain. People might remember that.
Yep.
But you had the ability to add a custom domain. And for a little while, I actually had paul@throt.com on that. But now it's, for a long time, it's been paul@throt.net, which I just prefer to the Hotmail address. And it's what I use to sign into computers with, right? So that's my Microsoft account. And over the lifetime of this, at some point, Microsoft got rid of the ability to have a custom domain on an Outlook.com account, essentially, or what used to be called Hotmail. And they brought it back a few years ago. They changed it so you could only go through GoDaddy, which a lot of people found objectionable for whatever reason.
Yeah,
which
GoDaddy used to be nasty. They have a new owner
Yep. And they're getting rid of it again. So the good news is, there's two bits of good news. So it's not happening. The cutoff isn't until November of next year. So you have 1 year to keep using a custom domain or create a custom domain. Once you have it configured, it will just keep working. So that's what I've been doing. Like I configured this back when I think Windows Live Domains was still a thing. That's how long ago it was. So in the interim years where they got rid of it and then brought it back with GoDaddy, I never had to use GoDaddy for this. My domain is somewhere else. It works fine. So unfortunately, if you do want to set this up today, and this is, in other words, you have a Microsoft 365 personal account, like an MSA, like this is, something you would get. This is a perk you get through Microsoft 365 personal or family. You could today set up a domain, you know, your own address, like, you know, bob@bob.com, whatever it is. And you have to pay the registrar, which is GoDaddy. So you'll have to keep paying for that. But as long as you set it up in the next year, this thing will keep working. So it is going away again. I don't know. a lot of people are really burned by this. People are burned by everything.
Right? Yeah, any change.
Like, I mean, they're everything is terrible. Like, they took it away. That's terrible. They brought it back with GoDaddy. Why does it have to be GoDaddy? Is there any way I could use anything other than GoDaddy? And now they're taking it away. And it's like, well, I guess I'm going to have to find a new email service, you know? Yeah, I guess. So
I'm a fan of paying for email, to be honest with you.
I am too.
If it's free email, Gmail, Outlook, whatever, well, Yahoo, then you get what you pay for.
So, yeah, in this case, I guess the issue here, though, is it's you are paying for Microsoft 365, personal or family.
Oh, okay. This isn't the Outlook.com free mail.
No, but it's still – so the thing is – it's still, but it's still like for individuals. Yeah. I mean, families, obviously multiple users, but it's not meant to be like a mini small business kind of interface kind
of
a deal.
That's how people are using it.
You could, if you're an individual for, it is more money, but you could get a Microsoft 365 business basic account, which is web only, blah, 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 whatever. You could do a custom domain with that. Obviously you could go to Gmail. Well, you'd have to go to some version of Workspace individual, you know, whatever it is. But there were other perks that you get as a Microsoft 365 subscriber with regards to Outlook.com. The big one is the ad-free interface, which to me is worth everything. There's nothing worse than Outlook.com with ads, but 50 gigabytes of storage for email and also email encryption support, which is kind of nice. So they're taking away the domain stuff, but the other stuff is still there. So, you know, it's not really for businesses, but that's the, you know, that's people are upset. What else do we got?
I like having my own email domain. I just go to a domain registrar. It's like $10 a year. Yep. I use Hover, obviously, our sponsor. And then because I pay for Fastmail, and they'll let me have dozens of domains with one account, dozens of addresses. I could stuff like that. So it's easy. I mean, it's not cheap, I guess. It's not free, but
I think the issue though is people, they want to stay with the Microsoft stuff. Right. And it's,
well, there are exchange servers out there too that you can,
well, you could, yeah. You, but the problem is you're going to be paying more. So
yeah, it's expensive.
A business, I'd have to look it up, but I think it's got to be somewhere between $6 and $10 a month for the basic business account.
That's nothing.
That will do. I know, but I agree with you. I'm just saying people are really upset about this. I think the issue is they're paying for Microsoft 365 anyway, right? They need the Office apps. They want the other, you know, the terabyte of storage, whatever it is. So this was like a perk. And so to them, it was like I was kind of getting this for free because I was paying for this anyway for those other reasons. And now what they're saying is, well, now I got to go pay for something else. And I get it. I mean, I do understand the complaint, but what are you going to do? It's Microsoft is an enterprise company, folks. You know,
right.
If you want the good stuff, you're going to have to get the business account, which, by the way, is going to be an interesting episode someday on Hands on Windows because – one, I haven't looked into this too much, but if you sign into Windows with a Microsoft 365 business account, which is an AAD account, you actually don't see a lot of the garbage that's in Windows. So I'm going to be looking into that soon. That's going to be an interesting future episode. So there are advantages to paying, you know, like you said. So something to think about. That's all I'm saying. This actually happened last week, and actually it was announced back at Ignite, which I think was in September. It feels like it was a million years ago, but I guess it was September. Microsoft is bringing what they call certificate-based authentication for Azure Active Directory to mobile devices, meaning iPhones and Android phones. And if that sounds like a mouthful, it is. But what it basically is the ability to use a YubiKey today and eventually other types of smart card-type devices where people have their own phones, but they need to authenticate against their work, you know, website or apps or whatever it might be. And they don't want work, you know, putting management stuff on their phone. But what this is a way to plug in, type in a PIN, gain access to the stuff. If you yank the card out, the key out, that stuff goes away. It's basically a way to enforce multi-factor authentication on mobile without having to heavily manage a phone on behalf of users. So kind of an interesting approach to passwordless or a new approach to passwordless. I I use what they call it 2FA, but with my Microsoft account and also with my Gmail or Workspace account, whatever, you're basically using 2FA where it's I don't actually type in passwords for the most part. Actually, with my Microsoft account, I don't ever type in my password. So the first time I sign into a computer, it sends a prompt to my phone. I okay it in Microsoft Authenticator. If I am using Google, actually, I do have to type in the password that one time. But then after that, it's kind of automatically signs me in. This is kind of another way to do that. And it's specifically designed for businesses that would, you know, in other words, look, you can use your own phone, but we're going to send you this thing in the mail. You got to go through the enrollment process, set up your certificate. It's now going to be tied to this little key, which in tandem with your phone will allow you to type in a PIN, and then you're in. Kind of an interesting way to do MFA for businesses. So I don't think that will ever be a like consumer solution, but then again, you know, individuals use YubiKeys. So
they're supporting passkeys too, along with Google and Apple, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep, they are. And actually, the other thing is, so I didn't know this, but apparently Android doesn't have native support for smart cards. So when you use YubiKey with an Android device, like YubiKey actually has to provide software to make that work on Android. And it's possible in the future this will be even more seamless. So for example, like a better approach, I think, for an individual would be you have the YubiKey on your keychain or something in your pocket, and it uses NFC to make that connection, right? But today you actually have to plug it into the port, which is kind of goofy on a phone, but that's the approach.
That, I mean, it works. Cause, yeah. And that's because the original YubiKeys were keyboards. So the phone just sees it as a keyboard, and it takes the text that the YubiKey's spitting out, which was a clever a little hack.
Yeah.
And I guess that works on phones just like it works on PCs.
I think what's changed since the early days is that mobile platforms, in particular iOS, I don't think Android is as far along with this, but they accept this as a form of authentication. Like this is a native capability now, like a smart card. They think of it as a smart card, but before they had to kind of work around the limitations on mobile, but that's getting a little more sophisticated. So I'm kind of hoping, I'm expecting, I guess, even eventually we'll probably see NFC versions of this kind of thing. Because there are, and I think there are.
YubiKey has right? NFC. Yeah.
And they have little versions that have like thumbprint things and stuff. You know, it's a pretty cool.
They're smart. They've really made it work as many places as possible. I use a really YubiKey to log into everything. And it's just a type C key. And
there's a Lightning version, obviously, for iPhone. They have different versions. Yeah, you could use it as a Windows Hello fingerprint reader if you had the right one, you know, with the USB port. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways to do it. It's kind of a cool thing. I mean, obviously, you want to see that just built into the device if you can.
But, yeah, I have one YubiKey that has Type-C on one end and Lightning on the other.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
I think that will no longer be necessary down the road.
We all do. I have some theories about that. But yes, we all do. Apple's a bitter company, by the way. We'll do USB-C in Europe. You know, like you could totally picture, like, you know, they're going to do something like that. We'll see. Anyway, the other interesting thing that's happened in this realm is, you may not be aware of this, but Google One is a service offering from Google. Obviously, it gives you additional storage and all this kind of stuff. And they have a VPN offering that's new. I think with the Google Pixel 7 Pro and maybe the 7 as well, I think you are going to get the VPN from Google One for free because you have that phone. But even if you don't have Google One, I think is how that's going to work. But they're actually now offering VPN by Google One on desktop operating systems like Windows and Mac OS. Now you have to pay for the Google One subscription. In fact, you have to pay for the $9.99 a month version or $99 a year, which is gives you 2 terabytes of storage and some other things. But it's a VPN solution for Windows. And it's funny, it's fun because the app that runs on Windows looks like a phone app, because of course it does, which is hilarious. And the screenshot that Google provided is a Windows 10 desktop from like 8 years ago. It's like the most old fashioned. It has all the old icons and everything. The original Edge icon, the old store, everything's wrong. And there's just like they just stuck a screenshot of the app on top of it. So it is yet another VPN for Windows. But I would say if you're already paying for Google One, I mean, it's just good to know that you can use this now on Windows as well if you want.
That's cool. I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. So you should look into this. You can put it on the Mac. You can put it on Windows.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It comes, Yeah, it's brand new. Yeah, it comes with your plan.
Yeah.
I think so.
So we had a massive earnings week. In fact, it's burned earnings for the last 2 weeks.
I've made a career out of writing earnings write-ups.
This is where you really miss Mary Jo. I know.
Yeah, it's well, no, I have to do this anyway, but I'm not going to. I write about all kinds of earnings. So, you know, Spotify, Roku, Disney Plus, you know, blah, blah, who cares? But the two I want to bring up are both related to the PC industry, right? So obviously, given the way things are going, we're kind of looking for indications about how the market's going, you know, what these companies are saying about the future, et cetera. Lenovo is the world's biggest maker of PCs. They did something really dishonest, I think I would say, in their press release about this. Their press release, and I did not quote this, so I'm going to do this off the top of my head, basically said, for the 10th quarter in a row, we grew revenues, which is an interesting statement because this was the first time in 10 quarters they did not grow revenues. So how did they come to that that quote? Because are you familiar with the term constant currency?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I've never seen a company do this. Companies always say we earned, you know, net income of this on revenues of this, but it was this in constant currency. The idea is, you know, the cost of the dollar goes up and down if it's a U.S. company, and that impacts earnings. And so what they like to say is like, yeah, this may look bad because the dollar is doing awesome right now. But in constant currency, we're doing awesome, you know. So I just ignore that. To me, constant currency is like a theory. Like if nothing ever changed, we'd be doing great. Yeah, no, that's true of everybody. But things did change. And so that impacts your finances, whatever. Lenovo actually put out a press release where they said that they grew revenues when you use the constant currency figure. It's like, guys, that's not what happened. Your revenues were down, actually. So anyway, not too bad, though. It was a 4% decline over the previous same quarter a year ago. PC sales were down 16%. Better than HP and Dell, by the way. HP was down 28% in the quarter. Wow. Dell was down 21%. I know.
Oh, yeah. So lots
not good,
better.
Not wow. good. Yeah. Yeah, but still double digits, right? It also, this is a little bit of hard data. This is a quote. It said, Lenovo maintained its industry-leading profitability of 7.4% thanks to its focus on premium PCs and operational excellence. That's actually really interesting to me because we often talk about PCs being a low-margin business. And I don't excuse this, but one of the reasons I think you see all kinds of crap around PCs, especially now, is they don't make a lot of money on these things. And this is a way to generate a little bit of income per PC. Lenovo is making money selling premium PCs, which do not have that crap around them, by the way. So when you buy a ThinkPad, there's no crap. And unlike an HP computer, which I love otherwise, not a lot of Lenovo branded utilities, right? I think this is a mistake that some PC makers make, but not doing great. They did have that quote. Lenovo believes in the long term that PC sales will remain above pre-pandemic levels, and its non-PC businesses are going to help it expand to new markets, blah, 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 whatever. So I would say, honestly, in the scope of the market, in the scope of the business they're in, Lenovo's doing pretty good. So that was pretty good, right? And they had kind of a nice long-term outlook, like we think it's going to be fine. So that's what I want to hear. You don't hear a lot of that these days. And then there's Qualcomm. And Qualcomm only factors into the PC market in a small way today. They did okay, honestly. They warned on the future. They did say their modems are going to be in iPhones for another year, which is great. That'll be nice short term, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the big thing to me with Qualcomm is we keep looking forward to this Nuvia acquisition bearing fruit, and we're going to see new generations of Windows and ARM chipsets based on Nuvia. And we keep kind of next year. It's going to be next. Next year is going to be great, right? And so we know there's a Snapdragon event every year, usually in December, often in Hawaii, which is awesome. My expectation is that they're going to announce the first generation of those chips at that show. But they did say, this is a quote from their CEO, whose name I'm now forgetting. I apologize. But he said, we expect to see an inflection point. Actually, I will just look at his name. Is Cristiano Amon. We expect to see an inflection point in Windows on Snapdragon PCs in 2024 based on a significant number of design wins to date. 2024 is not next year. So I guess we'll see what happens. So for now, we're not pushing to next year. We're pushing to the year after next year. So I don't know what that means for December.
It's next year-ish.
It's, you know.
Sort of.
It's the months ahead is what we're saying.
There you go. That's safer.
Yeah. It's coming, sort of. I don't know.
I thought I saw some Nuvia benchmarks, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think you did. That maybe like leaked type thing, or someone just hit a site.
Yeah, it was leaked. Yeah. So they're
and I think it was
actually in production.
Yeah, they're working on it for sure. And it's I think it was roughly Core i5, you know, performance, which is funny because 3, 4, 5 years ago, what it was, that was the promise. We're going to hit Core i5. Like that was that's the deal. I, you know, like we talked about this a few weeks ago, I think, when I reviewed that Lenovo Windows and ARM ThinkPad. It's close. Even right now with just the Snapdragon stuff, it's close. And if you think about it, it is something of a miracle that, you know, the first generation of these devices ran on literally the same chip that was in the phones at the time. I think it was a Snapdragon 835, I think was the name of the chipset, or 830. They literally just took the chip and put it in a PC, you know, and people are always like, you have no idea how, you know, powerful these computers are. And it's like, well, or these phones are rather like, well, yeah, no, it's actually,
you put it in a PC.
Yeah. Windows can kill any CPU as it turns out.
Yeah.
So they're getting there.
So what's the point of the Nuvia if it's only i5 speed? Is it good? Just lower power?
Yeah, it's Core i5 speed, but no fans. Right. That's the dream is super thin and light, super battery life, although that's been falling, and no fans. Right. And then also instant on connectivity. Not that you have to have a Windows and ARM system for that, but you really don't see a lot. Remember, we had this term always connected PCs. You could have an Intel PC that's always connected, often, by the way, with a Qualcomm modem in it. Now that Intel's not kind of in that game anymore, but the dream is these things will be devices, not PCs, even though they're really PCs, but true devices. You know, there's no fan in an iPhone. There's no fan in an iPad. Something that's that thin and light, but is a full featured, full power computer is the dream. But we're not there yet.
It's really a race, isn't it, between what Intel's going to end up doing with their, the 13th gen and then whatever comes next, and Nuvia Qualcomm.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, Intel seems to be showing that they can do a lot of the same thing.
You know what, though? So, all right, I don't want to go down my full conspiracy theory nonsense on this, but having reviewed a lot of Intel 12th gen chipsets, PCs this year, I've come up with a lot of theories about what's happening here. It's very clear that moving to this hybrid architecture has been difficult for Intel. It is, you know this. Anyone watching this probably knows this. If you bought a PC a year ago and it was Intel based, whether it was a laptop, let's just say laptop, 9 times out of 10 or more, it would have been a 15 watt U series chip. It would have had whatever performance characteristics, whatever battery life, but no matter where you went, Dell, HP, Lenovo, whatever it was, you could have gotten a high-end ThinkPad X1 Carbon. You could have gotten a low-end HP Pavilion, whatever. It would have been a U-Series Core i5 or 7, whatever. That would have been the chip every time, almost every time. Flash forward to this year, they do this hybrid architecture. They add a chipset into the middle. So there's U-Series on the low-end, which can I think is actually 7 or 15 watt. There's a 28-watt P-Series, which is brand new, and then the H-Series, and they go up from there. And H-Series is the one you would typically tie to like an NVIDIA graphics processor, so you could, you know, gaming PC or a workstation, whatever. 9 times out of 10 this year, the PC you buy is going to be a P-Series. So I think when they switch to this hybrid architecture, in order to achieve the same performance that you got with a U-Series, roughly, or a little bit better, you have to go to 28 watts. So you're going to lose out on battery life. That's what's happened, right? No one's really talking about this, but I find it interesting that Intel, which is making a grab for the more efficient part of the market with hybrid architectures and all that stuff, actually has to make less efficient chips to achieve performance benefits over the previous gen. Because what no one wants to see is every single review of every single HP, Dell, Lenovo, whatever PC saying, you know, it's weird. We did all our benchmarks, and this thing is like 13 or 26 or whatever percent slower than the machine it's replacing that was based on a more traditional, you know, four-core U-series architecture. Like, this is a fact. I mean, whatever anyone thinks, I'm literally about to go off the deep end with this Intel thing, but, like, it is interesting to me that in making this transition, they had to introduce a new type of chip that basically draws twice as much power on average in order to achieve the same performance as a non-hybrid architecture. Like, that's what happened. So, you know, 2022 was a really unique year for PCs because of that. I think there are other problems with the Intel chips this year, and I'm really curious what's going to happen with 13th gen. So I know they've announced the desktop stuff. I'm not super interested in that, but January is going to roll around. CES is going to happen. Everyone's going to announce new versions of everything, laptops, et cetera. Really curious to see what those look like compared to 12th gen, because I think this has to change. Like, this is a one-year anomaly that I don't think has been good for Intel or for their customers. So we'll see. Hmm. But yes, they have to make this change. It's I guess it's like, you know, they ripped the Band-Aid off and they're going for it. I appreciate that. I'm glad they're doing it. But something is not right.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's enough of that. I'm sorry. I have very dark thoughts about what's happening here. But
the good news, Mike and Cam's in our chat room.
Yeah.
Says all they're going to do when they take out the fans is let it get hot. Right. Which means it's just going to wear out faster. Right. So.
Oh, well, that's a good strategy. PCs last too long today. So
yeah, right. Let them break quicker. Yeah.
It's like when you have an air-cooled Volkswagen and the engine just turns to slag because it can't cool itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's time to upgrade the engine, you know. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I, look, the good news for Intel is they're competing with Qualcomm and they can't get their story straight to begin with. So Qualcomm is nowhere close to being a major player in the PC market. AMD is a bigger problem, right? So the laptop I'm using today for this show is one of a handful I have that are recent AMD Ryzen-based PCs. These do not exhibit the same problems as those P-Series Intel 12th Gen chipsets. So this is an opening for AMD as well. So we'll see what the world looks like. But next year is going to be interesting. And obviously, whenever Qualcomm comes through, will be interesting.
It's not a bad trend, right? I mean, I think... looking at how you can improve performance over power is a good thing in the long run.
Well, okay, but if we could credit Steve Jobs for one thing, he introduced a phrase into the mainstream, which is not something he invented, but he talked about performance per watt.
That's it.
Right?
Right.
And the problem with the P-Series is that to get more performance, you need more watts, right? The point of the Apple Silicon chips is that they use fewer watts, but still have a level of performance, right? And whatever math, whatever physics, whatever. But the truth is, if you buy a Mac today and you run Mac apps, everything runs great. It's not just benchmarks. It's things like using Lightroom or Photoshop or whatever it is. Those apps run great. And so I think that the P-Series was designed in many ways to make sure that these PCs look great on benchmarks. But what I'm saying is in day-to-day use, there are problems. And they've gotten better over time, by the way. And even the U-Series, like the 12th gen U-Series, which I thought was going to be kind of an also-ran because of how bad the P-Series was, those have gotten better over time too. So I just reviewed like an HP Elite Dragonfly based on a U-Series chip. Honestly, it worked great. It was fine. So
good.
Maybe drivers are getting better. You know, maybe something's happening there. But this started off really rough. Like the middle 6 months of this year, I'll call it, were a tough time for new PCs. That's in my experience.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and you try a lot of them.
I have at least 15.
Jeez.
Of them. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so this year, I got to say, AMD's looking pretty good. I'll just leave it at that. So I think Intel gets there, but we'll see if the 13th is the right, you know, we'll see.
Let's take a little break here, and then we're going to go into the developer section. We've got Xbox. Mm-hmm. I'm going to introduce you to a little thing we like to call Mastodon, tip of the week, app of the week. Yep. Got to come up with some booze for us at the end of the show.
I almost did it for today. I could do it right now. I could do this off the top of my head.
It's okay. I'm just saying.
I do have a. I did. I did actually invented a cocktail.
Oh,
Well, I might have discussed this. We could formalize it.
Oh, nice. Okay. No. Paul's cocktail invention. Mm-hmm. That should be interesting.
It's a stunningly obvious invention. Yeah. But
it takes some gin, and I found this thing called tonic water.
It's I don't know if anyone came up with Long Island iced tea before, but you just mix a bunch of crap together.
That's a complicated drink. You got to put a lot of stuff in that one. Let's take a break. Talk about our sponsor, CDW. This episode of Windows Weekly brought to you by Lenovo, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. The helpful people at CDW understand that as the world changes, your organization needs to adapt quickly to be successful. So how can CDW keep your business ahead of the curve? I'll tell you one way: with Lenovo ThinkPads. Love my ThinkPads. These powerful devices deliver the business class performance you're looking for thanks to Windows 10 and the Intel Evo platform. With your remote teams working across the country, around the world, collaboration doesn't have to be a problem. It isn't if you've got Lenovo ThinkPads, keeping your organization productive and connected from anywhere. Plus, CDW knows your workforce has different work styles, needs flexibility. That's why Lenovo ThinkPads are equipped with responsive tools and built-in features that let your team work seamlessly across their favorite tools. Now think about that for a second. And let's not forget about security. These high-performing machines protect at the highest level with built-in hardware to guard against modern threats without slowing your team down. When you need to get more out of your technology, Lenovo makes seamless productivity possible. And CDW makes it powerful. Learn more at CDW.com/Lenovo client. CDW.com/Lenovo client. We thank CDW for supporting Paul and Windows Weekly. Continue on with the show. Time to talk to developers. We had Christina Warren from GitHub was on Twitter on Sunday. Nice. Her boss, okay. Martin, brought a badge from the GitHub event, which is going on in San Francisco right now. It's the coolest thing. It's an e-ink badge. He programmed them. It was really cool. I am a
GitHub universe.
GitHub universe, yeah. I am a GitHub fan, I got to say.
That's really a live event, by the way. You could go to San Francisco.
They were doing it in person. Yeah. But there's also streaming. Yeah, that's why Christina was in town. I thought, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, she is cool.
Also in the news.
Yes. So this week, every November now, November will always be .NET month, right? It's also historically been the month where Microsoft has shipped new versions of Visual Studio, although now it's on a very different schedule. But back when it was on its old schedule, November was the time for that. So this past week, yesterday, Microsoft announced and released .NET 7 with updates across the stack. I mean, it's like MAUI, ASP.NET, C# went to version 10, F# went to version 7, I think, Entity Framework Core, blah, 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 on and on it goes. Even legacy technologies like Windows Forms and Windows Presentation Foundation were updated to support, not just to support .NET 7, but to have new features and so forth. Those technologies are more community supported than, say, Microsoft, but interesting. And of course, yes, a new version of Visual Studio, including the first version that's native on ARM, which we were just talking about. And so I don't think you're going to see a lot of developers working, you know, like on ARM. And that version does support a reduced number of workloads, obviously. But it does support desktop application across the stack, you know, WinForms, WPF, UWP, Windows App SDK, et cetera. And I don't remember the exact list of workloads, but I'm sure it does web and I don't remember what else, but it does a few other things. It's not the full, you know, version you got on x86 or x64. So that's that. And I was kind of hoping there'd be like a really big MAUI thing. Well, you know, here's what's like something really exciting, desktop, whatever. But I will say, you know, the presenters who I like that cover the MAUI stuff all the time casually throw out the term that MAUI is Microsoft's client. They didn't call it framework, but I'm going to say framework. Like, that's their client framework going forward. Like, they've been kind of edging toward this where in supporting what I felt for a long time, that no one's going to wake up one day and say, I've got it. I've got the best idea ever for an app, but it can only run on Windows. You know, it apps are cross-platform. And MAUI is that solution for Microsoft now. So this is the successor to Xamarin. You can create apps that run on natively on Windows, Mac, Linux, and Android. So, and you can do some integration with Blazor if you want to do some web stuff. That's a little more complicated, but maybe someday they'll have the whole thing there. But that is live on .NET 7 now, so you can upgrade to that. And then there's this GitHub event, which is what you were just referencing, happening in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And boy, do I have a hard time understanding GitHub's massive set of solutions now. They've announced so many new features. So they announced something called Copilot before, which was for individuals. And this is the way you can get, you know, code in, you know, I can't solve this problem. Where can I get code that solves this problem?
It saves you a trip to Stack Exchange to steal code. You just can steal it right in the editor, which is fantastic.
Repurpose.
I'm sorry, repurpose. Actually, somebody posted a video on YouTube. I'll have to see if I find it. One of the things Copilot will do is you could type in English what you want your regular expression to do. You know, I want to find all capital letters.
Expressions are the worst.
They're the worst. Yeah, it'll give you the regular expression, and then there's a way to test it. And then and this was even better. I'll find this video and show it to you.
Yeah.
Even better is it will take a really complicated regex. Sometimes these things are impossible to read and translate it and show you what it does.
Oh boy.
So it's pretty impressive.
I'll call myself an enthusiast programmer. I've spent a lot of time Google searching very particular programming things. Always end up on Stack Exchange, a couple of other websites. You have to kind of deal with the personalities of the people involved. There's always like, you know, it's obvious how you answer this question, you idiot, you know, blah, 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 that kind of thing. But useful, right? You often find something very useful in there. Being able to get right to that is of interest. So they are bringing this to businesses now, and this includes everything you would expect: admin controls, license management, et cetera, et cetera. So for teams of programmers, I think this makes sense. On the more humorous end of the scale, this is not humorous. It's going to sound humorous at first.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Let me take a step back from the cliff. They're introducing a feature called Hey GitHub, which is exactly what it sounds like. Actually, this is important as an accessibility need, because voice interaction for people who can't type comfortably either at all or for long periods of time will want to have this voice-based interaction where they can fill in code and then go back and edit it afterwards. I'm sorry. I just should not have made fun of that. Every time I see it, the knee-jerk reaction is to, hey, GitHub, like,
except,
seriously.
I see so many developers wearing wrist braces because of repetitive stress injuries. It's really common among developers.
Well, you can't see this, but this is not that this is some advanced ergonomic.
It's a split keyboard.
I don't know that I'd be able to work if I didn't switch to more ergonomic. People make fun of this mouse because it looks like a softball. It's about the same size, but I'm telling you, this thing with, I use a wrist rest with it. Like with a nice gel pad. This might be the only reason I can still do my career.
Yeah, I type all the time.
I started getting that, you know.
How many words a day do you think you write?
Well, I can tell you I average based on, what's it called? What's the service? Grammarly. This is just on the web, so it doesn't.
Oh, it tells you. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's about 48,000 words a week.
Wow. That's a novel every week.
Well, I mean, the couple of weeks when I published that the book to the site, those 2 weeks it was like 99,000 and 120 something. Yeah. It was like, you know, those were big weeks.
So you understand RSI and
coding? Yes. Yep. Yeah, my wife just had something with her thumb, and she went to a physical therapist, and she's in luck because she's not going to have any surgery or anything, but she started feeling something too. And I was like, you might want to think about ergonomic stuff.
This is actually an interesting problem, because while you can dictate text, dictating code is pretty finicky.
So do this. If you're interested in this topic, they have some videos showing how this works. And it is someone who has difficulty with their fingers. They have little, you know, things on their fingertips and so forth to help them. But it's sort of like anything else. Like if you say you're dictating a text message and it's something really long, and you blah, 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 you go on. But then you have to kind of go back and say, okay, fix that. It's like that. And so it does give you the code. You still have to go look at it.
Well, obviously. Of course.
But But it's yes, no. This is a good thing. There's no doubt about it. I'm sorry.
It's called Hey GitHub.
I know. Just hearing the name, I makes me laugh. Hey.
Well, it's good because Apple's getting rid of the Hey from Hey Siri, so they can just lend them a Hey. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
Hey GitHub. Let me see if I can find a.
Yeah, there's a neat video showing someone who has, some issues with their hands and
is this it?
How they use it.
I think this is it.
Let me see.
Hey GitHub code mode.
Yep, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yep.
So they're it's hard to type. And you know, part of this is I blame Apple
on a laptop
with these crappy keyboards. Yeah,
exactly.
Get a good keyboard.
I don't understand why we don't have even like slightly ergonomic keyboards. Remember that butterfly thing that IBM did with the ThinkPad?
Yeah.
Do something like that, but have it pop out and be ergonomic.
Hey GitHub, code mode?
I activated code mode.
Oh, I love this.
Using Hey GitHub for the first time was totally different than anything I'd used before. You're actually starting with what you want to do and telling that to the computer, and it's creating code for you. Define a function that categorizes a triangle by the length of its three sides.
Oh, so you're not dictating code.
Yeah.
You're actually using Copilot.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Define a function that accepts three numbers from the user as input rather than having to either.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
You still have to, you know, customize
it. Yeah, you still have to go in. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yep.
What a great tool that is. That's really interesting. Oops,
yeah, I think so.
I need that for my switcher. Hey, TriCaster, take camera 3. Oh, it worked.
Not that camera. The one that's in my brain.
Yes, exactly.
So I guess a big part of this show is GitHub is going after the enterprise now, right? And what that means is teams of programmers, right? So... And manage teams of programmers. So you have roadmaps and task lists and, you know, workflows, and you can see who's working on what at any given time, you know, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of GitHub suddenly has gotten very, not that it wasn't complex, don't get me wrong, but it's the amount of stuff that they offer has gotten complex, if that makes sense. There's a lot going on with GitHub. So interesting.
Yeah, I wish I could go to Universe. It's just up the road or down the road, but I'm busy doing things still.
Yeah.
Very cool. I use GitHub like crazy. I mean, you know, pay for an account and I use it like crazy just as a, you know, personal thing. There's so much you can do.
And the growth is astonishing.
Yeah, they've done a good job.
There are almost 95 million people who are using GitHub. 20.5 million new users this year alone. 90% of the Fortune 100, which I think explains their push into more enterprise-friendly features, too. So it's going pretty well.
Their VP of Developer Relations, Martin Woodward, was in the studio on Sunday, and that's where I got that cool GitHub Universe badge that Martin had programmed and stuff. So it's really cool. He actually was at .NET FDN, and so he was at Microsoft. And when the GitHub acquisition happened, they moved him over to GitHub. So he created the Microsoft first Microsoft repository on GitHub.
Nice.
So it's a really cool thing.
He's like, we might want to look into this. This is a pretty good service.
This thing works pretty good. Pretty good. Martin, thank you for the badge. I really, really appreciate it. I will wear that with pride. All right, moving right along. I think it's time for the moment really everybody tunes this show in for.
I hope so.
The Xbox segment.
Yeah, oddly, another week of a lot of Xbox news. Weird.
This is a trend.
I don't know. So I think it's, we always reference this time. It was 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago, August. You and I watched that Microsoft event.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And we thought, and I always compare it to The Wizard of Oz. I thought this thing is going to explode into HDR 4K wonder, and it never did.
Never
did. What's going on with this game?
It's like The Wizard of Oz. It stayed black and white. It just never.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So they delayed the game a year. It came out last year. It's done pretty well. They've come out publicly and said, yeah, we kind of dropped the ball on post-launch content. And they've done a pretty slow job of adding features that people have expected to be there from day one. But they just yesterday, whatever it was, released what they're calling the winter update. It's November, by the way, but whatever. Okay, the winter update. And this is going to bring Halo Infinite up to just about where it should have been about a year ago, which is terrible to say it that way. But Forge beta is available. Forge is the environment that you can use to create multiplayer levels. There are two new multiplayer levels available in Halo Infinite. They were both created with Forge, of course. And so that's there in beta. They're doing co-op now, campaign co-op, and this is only over the network, right? They're not going to do the split screen thing anymore. That they announced that a few months ago. The neat thing there is, I think a lot of people get into the campaign. They kind of blow through it. They just want to finish the story. But there's all these things you can unlock. There's all these secrets in the game. And until now, there was no way to go back and easily go play those levels over again. So now you can do that with your friends.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, find all that stuff. You know, mission replay, all that stuff. there's a new experience progression system, which apparently was very needed in the multiplayer system. That's in beta. They're going to tweak that as they go. And, excuse me, one new game mode called Covert One Flag. And then 24 new achievements. So they're finally, you know, they're getting there. I mean, there was this thing they were going to do seasons and they kept delaying in them and they were going to do these features and then they canceled them. And, you know, it's 2 years later. But I feel like this is in a good space. And it's not like the old days where you kind of release a game and then the developers move on to the next thing. Like, this game's going to be supported for many years. This is something Microsoft has done a great job with, not just with the Halo games. Like, if you think about the Master Chief Collection, but also Sea of Thieves, Gears of War, you know, pick your game. I mean, they've done a tremendous job of supporting their first party title. So Halo Infinite is going to be one, you know, it's their marquee title. So they're going to do right by that. And it's taken a while, but you know, they're getting there. The day came and went where the EU said, we're going to make our decision on Activision Blizzard, and they punted. So they're going to take a longer look at it. They're going to figure this out by March. I think that this was expected. It's not really a big deal. The interesting thing is, if you look at what they published about it, you can kind of tell the only thing they care about is Call of Duty, which is a little strange because Activision Blizzard owns several really important game franchises that are cross-platform and matter on other platforms other than Xbox, but they really care about Call of Duty. So I think the formal thing that Microsoft can do is just sign some agreement with whatever regulatory bodies and say, look, this will always be on PlayStation. We're going to look back on this, not and laugh, but for all of the scrutiny of this, I think what's going to happen here is what happened with Minecraft. They're going to put it everywhere. It's going to be in more places. It's going to come to the Switch. You know, the mobile stuff is going to expand. I think there's going to be more Call of Duty than we need, if anything. The goal is not to make Call of Duty not on PlayStation. So I think it's going to go through, but Microsoft's goal is to put Call of Duty everywhere it can be.
Right.
They want to expand the availability of it.
Right.
Sony's contention is that they're going to use Call of Duty as a bargaining chip and,
right,
and potentially take it off the platform.
Yeah, a wedge. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But Microsoft said again and again, no. It's always going to be there.
Yeah, I can't stop saying it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
This isn't a huge story because they're not necessarily doing it yet, but Microsoft sent out a survey to Xbox gamers asking them about different things, you know. And one of the things they talked about was, would you be interested in having in-game features that can optimize settings to save energy if you toggle them on? And this is, we talked about something like this earlier today, where it's like, game players don't care about this. in other words, you're telling me I could save a little bit of money on my electricity bill because this thing is like a nuclear power reactor sucking down the energy grid because I'm playing Halo or Call of Duty or whatever. You're telling me I could change the way the game works? Like lower resolutions, lower frame rates, fewer visual effects, less GPU usage, and then I'm going to save a little bit of money? I don't think anyone's going to do this. So they've opened it up to the community. If this is of interest, Microsoft will build these features in to the Xbox console. So we'll see. I don't know anything about how much power consumption these things use, but Microsoft's, actually I do know, sorry. Microsoft says the Xbox Series S, which is what I'm using, draws 74 watts.
Wow.
So not much more than a laptop. Xbox Series X, a typical laptop, 153 watts during gameplay.
Yeah.
It's about double, so that makes sense. But I mean, you know, I have an H series HP that I'm pretty sure is 200 watts, by the way. And of course, if you have a gaming PC, you know, like the smallest power supply you get on one of those things is probably 450. But I bet it's more typical to be 550, 750, you know, bigger, probably. It's been a while for me. But anyway, every little bit helps. But I don't know. I feel like when I get into a game, you know, job one is not saving the environment. It's saving the planet from the aliens that I'm killing. Come on.
Are there aliens in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2?
No, there are not.
No. Are there zombies, though, right?
Not yet. Not
but there
so
will
far.
Be.
But yeah,
there
I
will
think
be.
There will be. Nancy yeah, there
zombies.
Probably will be.
You know, you can't get
this
rid
game's,
of them.
This game's going to be around for at least 2 years. So yeah, you could expect this going to be a, next year's going to be big for that kind of stuff,
yeah.
I think. So
yeah.
Definitely coming.
Yeah.
And what else we got here? So we got Nintendo announced their quarterly earnings. Honestly, they're doing fine. I mean, there's always, you know, they lowered their Switch sales forecast by 2 million units for this year. So they expect now to sell 19 million versus 21 million. But these guys have sold, they've sold over 114 million Switch units to date, which makes it, I think, the third best-selling console of all time. So the Nintendo DS has sold about 154 million units. PlayStation 2, for some reason, we have no idea how many, but it is at minimum 155 million. It's probably even close to 200 million, but 114 million makes it better. I mean, it's more than anything Sony or Microsoft has ever made. No, I'm sorry, not the PlayStation, not counting PlayStation 2. Almost anything Sony's made and everything that Microsoft has made. So they're doing okay. They're making money. They have their own little cute market that they're in, so they're doing fine.
It's a cute little thing they're doing.
They do their own thing. Like the laws of nature do not apply to them. You know, they do cute little games.
I love my Switch. I got Portal and Portal 2 on it. I got Animal Crossing.
Nice.
It's fun. I like it a lot better than the Steam Deck or whatever that thing Logitech's selling. It's it's real portable computing. And sure, it's not going to be quite as, you know, AAA. But who cares?
I know, but that's fine for that kind of game. I think it's somewhere between what I'd call casual games and, you know, hardcore.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's right in them. And that's kind of a sweet spot.
Right in the middle. It is a sweet spot. They're doing great. I mean, they're killing it.
It saved me during COVID. I played Animal Crossing basically without relentlessly in 2020. I mean, relentlessly. It saved me. So I had my little island where nobody wore masks.
In the oxymoron department, we have this notion of gaming Chromebooks, which I'll just let you kind
weird.
Of steep on that one for a moment. Yeah. But the reason these are starting to make some sense, there's two reasons, actually. One is, of course, game streaming, right? So services like, you know, the NVIDIA, whatever, what's the NVIDIA series, GeForce Now, or Xbox, you know, cloud gaming, whatever, right? A Chromebook is a big screen. It's got a keyboard. You can plug in a controller. Honestly, for cloud-based games, not so horrible. But the other thing that's changed is that where Chromebooks used to be these low-end pieces of junk, honestly, they're pretty good hardware for the most part these days, right? So Core i5, Core i7, even AMD Ryzen 5000, whatever. There are actually, I think AMD is the one that makes Chromebook-specific CPUs and chipsets. And they do have this notion of, well, you can install Linux on it, right? I mean, it's kind of getting to the point where you could game on these things. And so they're kind of pushing this. If you look at the list of kind of gaming compatible Chromebooks, it's not very big. It's probably 12 computers, something like that. They did announce new cloud gaming Chromebooks recently from Acer, Asus, and Lenovo. But one of the big things that's coming to Chrome OS is Steam. And so back in, February, March, they announced like an alpha version of this that was only available on Chrome OS in the dev channel, I think it's called. Now there's a beta version of Steam that's available to Chrome OS in the beta channel, right? So they're kind of aligning those, and presumably sometime in the next 6 months or so, probably at CES, by the way, we're going to see the final release of this stuff. So these things have, you know, high-end processors, lots of RAM, decent amounts of storage, high-resolution displays. you never know. So this is not something I'm going to spend a lot of time thinking about, but it's out there if you want it. There it is. And this will segue into my tip. Netflix announced that they're working on a Gears of War movie, finally, which is awesome. And if you've ever played this game, especially the first one or any of the games, it's impossible not to think that this could be a movie. And this is happening. And so I guess based on the success of the Halo TV series, I don't know. They are going to.
You're being sarcastic there, I think. Yes.
Yeah, a little bit, but they are doing it, so that's fine. And we're going to talk about Gears a little bit more in a moment. But there's also going to be a Gears of War animated TV series.
Now, of course,
I assume this is not little Weeble a guy. I think it's going to be like a like an adult thing because this is an adult story. But good. This is good. This is. This is something that should happen. I think this makes sense.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Halo TV series has been renewed for a second season.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, well, I was.
Yeah. Well, Paramount Plus is.
I was mocking it. Over there. I was wrong.
So,
wrong to mock it.
Yeah, you were probably in the right place. So, if we could, is it okay to switch into the back of the book seamlessly? Is that a.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's go. Let's do it. Did you mention the Stadia refund email?
I did not. Right, because I didn't link to it. Sorry. Yeah, so just before the show started, I saw a story saying that Google had sent out their first emails to Stadia customers to explain how the refund thing was going to
work. The reason I ask is because as soon as I saw that in your rundown, I checked. Mm-hmm. And at 10:30 this morning, half an hour before the show began, I got mine. I got mine.
So what it doesn't say is good news. You're getting $100 back, or whatever the figure is, right? So,
but we'll they kind of explained
that, the schedule. So I'm curious to see how this goes. I bought a Stadia controller. I paid for Stadia, obviously, and I bought two games. So
they say you're not going to get your subscription fee back.
Okay. Well, So I'm $60 for a controller probably, and maybe $25 a game, something like that.
I can't remember what I bought. So.
I hope they give it to me in the form of a Google Store coupon, which actually is also a tip. We'll get to that in a moment, too.
Really? They say we'll attempt to automatically refund each transaction to the form of payment used to make purchase.
Right. That just means it goes back to my wife, Leo. That's useless.
I don't want that. No.
I want the money. Give me the money.
Give me the cash.
So I'm always on the outlook for good industry books, and my tip this week is about a good industry book. It's written by Cliffy B. Blazinski. This is the guy who he was not responsible for, but he worked on Unreal and Unreal Tournament, but he is responsible for Gears of War, which is what we were just talking about. It's called Control Freak, My Epic Adventure Making Video Games.
That's a great name.
Right? All right, here's the thing. Gears of War is a fantastic game. It is, and you got to remember, this thing came out probably, 2006? It came out with the first Xbox 360. So somewhere in the middle of Halo 2 and 3-ish, it came out. It was Microsoft needed like a first, it was a third party, but they published it. They needed a big blockbuster game that was Xbox only, and this was it. And what's fascinating about this book to me is this guy goes into great detail about how he invented this world and everything that was in it, and he had people in the team who helped him, obviously, but all of the stuff that went in, it's genius. Like this game was just right time, right place, right everything. Like he had this idea in the back of his head. He would watch Band of Brothers came out and he's like, I want to do something like Band of Brothers.
That makes
sense.
I want
it to be like bombed out, bleak Europe, gray.
Well, that's one of the things I remember about it is the color palette tended towards kind of this grayish, everything before then had been like Unreal and Unreal Tournament have been garishly colorful.
Right.
And Gears of War stood out because it wasn't.
Unreal and Unreal Tournament, at least there was Unreal Tournament in probably 2003, 2004, I think, were the ones I remember. But those games were kinetic, fast moving. It was like bam, bam,
it's like
bam.
A pinball machine.
Lots of bright colors and fast moving. This game was the exact opposite. It slowed it down. It was realistic. It was sort of, it was an alien world, but you're not fighting aliens. You're fighting creatures that live under the ground. It was after a war, so everything had been destroyed. You're all fighting for your life. It's a team of people that really care about each other and kind of help each other out and all that stuff. There are bursts of color in the game. Like they have this luminescent, I forgot the name of it, whatever the underground, the lava-like stuff that they use for power, which is what the creatures are going after, which adds this incredible element of bright color to this otherwise drab world. The game was fantastic. I played it multiple times. The subsequent games, and Microsoft now owns it, have been okay. Like, they've been good to okay. I think I've played through every single one of them, actually, the campaigns. I think I have. But the first one I played through like a dozen times. It's one of those games, like, if you were to go back in history and say, you know, games that you play and play again and again, for me, those games are, you know, Doom and Quake. They're Unreal and Unreal Tournament, absolutely. Halo 1, 2, and 3, for sure. Call of Duty, obviously. But Gears of War is on this list. There's no doubt about it. And a lot of stuff where it's about staying low to the ground, hiding behind things so you don't get shot, reloading. He explains how they did that. And it was all these things, like, as they created the game, they kept adding all of the features that made this game what it was. And it's just... it's a fantastic game, but it's fascinating reading how they got to it. And it's a great book. So if you care about the industry at all in general, but all, you know, obviously video games or this game in particular, you got to read this book. It's fantastic.
Control Freak, My Epic Adventure Making Video Games by Cliffy B.
Yeah. Even the song. So remember the first promo video for this game was the song Mad World, which is a Tears for Fears song, but it was a remake version that I think they used for the ad, but it's a real slow.
It's sad.
Yes. It's really forlorn.
I even remember that. This was a long time ago.
This was epic.
Yeah.
But it was monumental. Like,
I
this
totally
was a
remember
big,
that. Yeah.
Yeah. Big, big deal. Really big deal.
Oh, now I want to play it.
Yep.
If I can find the original Gears
excellent
of War.
Game. Excellent game. They did a PC version eventually that added like an additional level where you fight that Tyrannosaurus Rex looking Godzilla thing.
Here it is.
That eventually.
Look, YouTube's got everything.
Too.
I swear.
Of course they do.
There's nothing you can't find.
Yeah. So it looks like song. Europe during World War II, right?
Yeah,
like you get that vibe from that.
Yeah. Very, very Band of Brothers. And kind of sepia and gray. I can't play the whole song, but you know this.
Sure.
It's a mad world. Yep. Wow. Look at that. Yeah, this was a real... It's hard to establish how different this was from what we'd
seen. Everything about it was different. It was beautiful looking, but it was drab. You know, it was slow moving and low to the ground where other games... You know, one of the problems for Microsoft, they were like, so wait a minute, this is like an alien planet and you're fighting aliens? And they were like, no. Yeah, it's an alien planet, but it's like World War II. And what they're fighting is creatures that already live on their planet, like they're underground.
Right.
And they're not aliens in spaceships. Like, there's no spaceships.
Right.
And,
it's an interesting story. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really well done.
Yeah.
It's a great game.
Love to read that book.
Great game.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Definitely
looking Always looking
that.
For those books.
Yeah. Me too. And we mentioned Google and Stadia and everything. And so Google... published a preview of their Black Friday sale. This is going to be happening a lot this month, obviously. I don't think it's everything they're going to have. I really want to get one of their Wi-Fi router mesh things, 6E, but I don't want to pay full price for it, so I'm kind of holding out on that. And actually, I might get a Pixel 7 something, too, based on those phones are going to, like $150 off or $100 off, depending on which one you're looking at, combined with some other, promotions and things and trade-in could make sense. So definitely just go to store.google.com and you'll see that. And in keeping with Black Friday, then the theme, I've been using this, I'm going to call it an app. I use the web version of it, but there's a web extension you can get for Edge or Chrome. You can get a mobile app, if iPad, iPhone, whatever. It's called Keepa. And what Keepa does is it lets you search for things on Amazon, and then it tracks the price. And what you basically say is, send me a notification when it gets below this price or whatever. And it's a way to keep up on stuff. In other words, you want to buy something, you don't want to pay full price. You want to see when it goes, lower, et cetera. This is a great service. There are probably other services like
it's
this.
Camel. Have you ever used that?
I think it's very similar. Yeah.
Keepa. Okay.
Yeah, so I actually, right now, I'm using this to track the price of two different Wi-Fi mesh router sets I might choose from. So,
cool.
Anyway, I found it to be really helpful. So, this is kind of a neat thing. And again, Black Friday is coming up. So, this is kind of a good time of year if you're going to be buying presents or presents for yourself. I'm not, no judging.
It's okay.
You know, this is one way to keep the cost down potentially.
Well, I think you have whipped through this in record time. Mm-hmm. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, but
without Mary Jo slowing you down, you really get down to brass tacks. I tell you.
Yeah.
No
gong
in here. Yeah.
We could do a
drink
thing.
Let's do a cocktail. Yeah.
I'm going to do this off the top of my head, so my wife has not sent me the ingredients, but I came up with this idea. So basically, now that we've moved into fall, it's getting colder. This is the time of year where you start turning to drinks, I'll say, that are based on brown liquors, which are typically bourbons or scotches, that kind of thing. And, of course, the classic, or they're actually the two classics for this kind of drink, is a Manhattan and an Old Fashioned. And they're very similar. The difference is that let me see if I can get this right off the top of my head, because I've mixed them into one drink now. But with an Old Fashioned, it's basically a bourbon, simple syrup, bitters, and I think that's about it. And then the Manhattan gets rid of the simple syrup and adds vermouth, a sweet vermouth. Vermouth gives the drink kind of a mouthfeel, which I like, and kind of a unique taste. But I find Old Fashions are often too sweet. Mm. And when I make that myself, I use it with less simple syrup. Like
I
my
agree.
Wife makes like a maple simple, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the vermouth is kind of interesting, but it's often, depending on the vermouth you get, is almost not sweet enough in many cases. So what I came up with was the Old Hatton, which is a combination of these two drinks.
Old Hatton, which is, I love it.
Yeah. So it's two parts bourbon, half a part each of sweet vermouth and simple syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, orange and Agostino bitters. And super easy to make. It is this time of year in a glass. You know, it is the thing to sip on like a cold night in November or December. You know, whatever
sounds
you do.
Sounds cozy. Doing. Sounds nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
Big ice cube, preferably.
Yeah.
Got to do that. Mix this in a drink with ice, in a glass with ice, rather. Use a strainer. Very important that you mix this with ice.
I'm just glad you're keeping the alcoholism alive on this program.
Listen, my liver's not going to kill itself.
If you follow Paul on Instagram, you will see, you will get the impression that he's eating and drinking himself to death, honestly.
that's right.
But you enjoy your food and drink, and I enjoy watching along with you. That's all I can say.
Sure. So there's all kinds of reasons you might have to have an Old Fashioned, you know.
I think you're right. You know, I've never
tried baseball game.
I've always done clear beverages, and now I'm thinking, man, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try. I see it sounds so good. I'll give this a try.
It's important. Like, obviously, with scotches, they can be very strong and they can be smoky,
peaty.
Which I don't like.
You don't want peaty or smoky.
That.
No.
You really want a bourbon for this kind of a drink.
Yeah.
Smooth.
I think you're right. Yep.
Yeah.
Or sometimes an Irish whiskey.
You can adjust the taste. Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way. Irish whiskey is perfect. That's a great choice for this.
Yeah. Yep. If you don't want to do the bourbon, which is sometimes a little too cloying, a nice Irish is
good. Yeah, don't use really an expensive whiskey in this.
No,
like a Jameson or
delicious.
Even a Jack Daniels even is fine.
Yeah. Mr. Paul Theriot, I tell you, you've done it again. We've come to the end of this. Now, did you want me to give you a little Mastodon in service?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes,
only
please.
If you want to.
No, I meant to ask you about this.
All the cool kids are doing it. They're leaving Twitter.
Yep. So tell me again where you got to go, though. And
so first of all, you have to understand why Mastodon's not Twitter. And
right.
I think a lot of people who come to Mastodon think, well, it's just an open source Twitter.
No.
No one owns Mastodon.
It's decentralized, right?
It's decentralized. It's not... The software Mastodon was created by Gargron, Eugene Rochko, who is a German.
Okay.
And like a good German, has engineered it beautifully. He's been doing this for years. We've been running a Mastodon server for 3 years. But it isn't the Mastodon protocol. It runs on ActivityPub, which is a very good open protocol. And there are lots of things that run on ActivityPub besides Mastodon. There is ActivityPub-based YouTube clone. There's Pleroma, which is also a Twitter, microblogging site. There's PixelFed, which is an Instagram-like thing. So these all use ActivityPub so that they can talk to each other. PixelFed. So they can talk to each other. And the way it works is somebody like yours truly sets up a server. Right. There are hundreds of Mastodon servers. There are fewer of these other guys, but there are many to choose from. So the first barrier that a lot of Twitter people have coming to Mastodon is, well, where do I start? You know, they go to Mastodon.social, right, which is Gargron's instance. I wouldn't go there right now. It's way overwhelmed by the number, because everybody kind of goes there. You're better off. You can go to joinmastodon.org and look at various servers, or
so
just
that,
search
that
around.
That is what I did, and I didn't understand. So...
so you're going to join one server. Once you, I would recommend Twit Social, because that's our server, twit.social. I'm not pushing it much, because I want it to keep, be a kind of cozy local instance for people who listen to Twit. So it's that's kind of what it is. Many of our hosts are starting to move there, stuff like that. In fact, there's a lot of Windows guys. Scott Hanselman is on Mastodon. So there are a lot of people on the, in the, they call it the Fediverse, the federated universe. And then you go one corner of it. The nice thing about the corner is it has its own style, its own moderation. I'm in charge of the moderation of that. So I moderate it in the way that I want to, you know, family friendly and no hate speech and conversations, not broadcast, things like that. But there are other servers. They all have, there's a journalists one, journa.host, that just got started because a lot of journalists are migrating away from Twitter. So you go to Twit Social, you can join there. Now there, you'll see, if I turned on the advanced web interface. The simple interface just looks like Twitter. This looks more like TweetDeck. And you'll see a number of feeds. There's the home feed, which is people you follow. That's like your Twitter followers feed. Local is everybody on twit.social or whatever instance you join. So that's why it's kind of good to join an instance where you like the people, because that's who you're going to see in your local feed. And then they also condition to somewhat this third feed, which is the federated timeline. It's not a fire hose. It's not everything, but it's everything people on your instance follow. So it's like friends of friends.
Yep.
It's, and it, it depend on our server. It's moving pretty quick now because there's so many people on it and so forth.
I just did send a request, by the way.
Oh, good. And that's one thing I do to keep spammers out, as I approve all the requests. We've been getting more than 100 a day. In fact, I'll show you real quickly. The growth is kind of stunning. If I go to my administration interface, 8,000% growth in users, 3,250% growth in interactions. So it's gotten, but I, you know, this is a 1,700 user. So that's pretty typical. There are 1,000 to 2,000. Mastodon.social is more than 100,000 now. So it's really, it's gotten too big, I think. So this is a good way to start. But then you can follow anybody anywhere. So you saw I mentioned Scott Hanselman. Is on there. You could actually, he's not, you can search for him. And if somebody's following him on our server, there he is. So you can search for him. And then you'll see his profile right here. I'm already following him, but you can follow him. And you see he's at Mastodon.social. So you would copy this into your interface and follow, or click follow him there.
Right.
The other thing that happens is there's no verification checks, despite the number of blue checks you might see. Those are fake. But there is a way to verify yourself using your profile, because you can do a rel.me tag in any site you control. This will give you a green check. See, Scott has done that with his website, because he controls that, and his podcast. So those are verified. He hasn't done it with TikTok or YouTube. But if you see these green checks in the profile, that means, yeah, it's Scott Hanselman, at least assuming that Scott controls Hanselman.com. So, you know, and similarly, if you look at my profile, let's go over to mine. By the way, this is how you enter him in there. You paste him into the search and then add him. If you go to my profile, Twit is verified. My blog is verified. I have a open PGP proof. This actually, I did verify the Twit forums, but that hasn't come through. It takes a little while to get have that come through. So that's another important point. And then the once you join, it's very much like Twitter. There are a few differences. You call them toots, not tweets.
See that?
Okay. It grows on you. Trust me.
Sure.
Some if you don't like that, there are some clients that call them posts, if that makes you feel better. You type what's on your mind. You get 500 characters. You get all the emojis, plus custom emojis, including, I might add, the Paul your very own Paul Theriot there.
Oh,
it's
boy.
It's the dark-haired Paul.
Mm-hmm. I remember him.
Join us. Now, there's a couple other things you can do. You can choose who it goes to. You've got privacy settings, so you could choose that. That's the globe there. This is for polls. You can do if you want to do a poll. And then this one's pretty important, CW. They call it a content warning. I think of it as a headline. For instance, there's an ethos on Mastodon, which is different than Twitter, which is we want to be protective of our members. So there's some members, for instance, who have, and I would recommend this for you, who have eating disorders. So it's considered polite to do a content warning and just type food in if you're going to post pictures of food or drink if you're going to post pictures. So they don't have to see it. So I post a headline on everything so people don't have to see stuff about Twitter or whatever so that they know ahead of time. And the way I...
So you can just let them know this is like a twit thing and,
and they don't have to read it.
You're not interested in that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that, you know, some people don't like these content warnings and most people, especially new from Twitter, don't use them. But I kind of recommend you do, just out of politeness. So here's Jan.
I see. Okay.
So he actually didn't understand it because the picture shows. He's trying, and that's the.
So it's showing the food, but not the other stuff.
It shouldn't show anything, right? You get the
right,
idea.
Right, right.
Politics these days is a big one. You know, put politics.
Yeah.
In. But I put all of my posts actually. I, of late, have been doing that because I actually think it's a useful kind of headline so you know what you're going to see. Jeff Jarvis is here now. There are quite a few people who have joined. Greta Thunberg has moved over. A lot of celebrities are starting to move over. I think as Elon continues to kind of...
When's Elon Musk going to come over?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be funny? Well, that's another thing I should point out is, and why you want to join... If you can't, it's easy to move, by the way. If you decide you're on the wrong server, there's a path for moving it. But the server admin, me in this case, decides what other servers to federate with. We don't federate with everything. As soon as I see that a server is a hate speech, you know, there are a lot of, quote, free speech servers. I defederate. So it's as if they're not part of our universe. That's the choice of the admin of an instance. He can also ban individuals and say nobody can follow this individual or see their posts. As soon as I see somebody spewing racist, anti-Semitic, hate speech of any kind, I will block them. And if a site does a lot of that, I will block the site. So we don't have a moderation problem. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And you have all of those controls individually, too. So if you say, well, Leo's not blocking this guy, but I sure would like to, you can do that. Or Leo's not blocking this site, but I want to, you can do that for yourself. So you have a lot. It's really designed, I think, because it's open source, it's not a company owning it. It's designed to support its users in the way they want.
Probably not a thing that can happen. But one thing that would be useful for making a transition like this would be a way where you could post on both services at the same time.
Nobody wants you to do that, but you could.
No, but to make, you know, it's hard going
from
a service where I have a huge number of followers to something where I have zero, you know.
Yeah, I left 500,000 followers, but okay, I understand. It's a little gauche, but there are a number of ways to do that. There are a lot of cross-posting servers. So I will leave that as an exercise for you, but you can absolutely set it up that it cross posts. You can do it with if this and that as well, but you can cross post easily. And there are people who do. That's where I would use a content warning, cross post, something like that.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Somebody has already set up two fake Paul Theriot accounts. Unless you have set up. Well, no, this is Jeff's telling me that there are spoof accounts. So I will block those as soon as you tell me that they are not real.
No, that's not me.
Yeah, I figured. I will.
Also, that's not the picture I would be using. But whatever.
That's what I figured. That's what I thought. Anyway, that's one of the things. You can always see if somebody is really who they say they are with that Realm Tech. Really is a great thing. So you can verify in a really clear way, and it's up to you to do that. So anyway, you don't have to do it. Stay on Twitter, but when the time comes,
I signed up.
And it will.
Or I signed whatever I did.
You did. You asked for an invitation. So I'll go in there and I'll approve. I have to do this now two or three times a day because there's so many refugees. Yeah, we have 48 people pending. But I will approve you right now so that you are accessing the site. Takes me a little while. Approve, approve, approve. Okay, I just approved you. So you should be able to go in there and say and do an introduction post. And everybody who listens to these shows and any of our Twitch shows, this is free. It's open to all. You do have to get approved only to block spammers. And it's nice to have some of our hosts in there. It's fun.
Leo, I'm interested in free speech. Is this going to be part of your platform?
Come on in there. Just try it, buddy. Just try it. I think you'll like it because I feel like it's kind of what Twitter was 10 years ago.
Right.
And it's aggressively, there's nobody owns it. Elon couldn't buy it if he wanted to.
Sure.
Which is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. I really like that part about it.
Yeah, that's a selling point. Suddenly.
Yeah. And there's things that somebody's saying, well, let me know when my county office of emergency services get there. You know, they may or they may not. And maybe you want to keep Twitter. Yeah. That's fine. You know, I don't personally have anything to do with Twitter anymore, but we still parse post marketing stuff there on our Twit Live and inside Twit accounts. I'm not going to stop them doing that if they think that's important. But I feel like this is what social networking, and you know what, that's like the Discord. It's a more personal kind of social network.
That's right.
I like it. All right. Thank you for letting me give my little plug. People ask if they can support it. We did have to, I was paying 15 euros a month for it. We had to beef it up. It's now 100 bucks a month because we got so many new members. That's great. I'm thrilled. If you do want to support it, we don't take donations there, but we could join Club Twit. $8 a month, $7.99. Mm-hmm. Gets you access to all of the shows, including Paul's new Hands on Windows. Ad-free, absolutely ad-free. You get access to the Discord. And you get access to our Twit Plus feed, which has stuff before and after the shows, silly things, fun things, special shows like Hands on Windows. And I should add, we still have a free IRC, free Mastodon, free forums at twit.community. That's for everybody. But when you do join Club Twit, it helps support those because they all do cost money to run. So it helps support those a little bit. So thank you for that. Thank you so much, my friend. Paul Theroux is at Theroux.com. Support him by getting a premium membership there. You'll see there's a lot of great content that you will get. You should also take a look at the Field Guide to Windows 11 at leanpub.com. And then join us every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. We are now in Standard Time, so it's 1900 UTC at live.twit.tv if you want to watch live. On-demand versions at the website, twit.tv/ww. There's a Windows Weekly YouTube channel, and of course you can subscribe in your favorite podcast player, and all that's free, thanks to our fine advertisers. Thank you, Paul. Have a great week.
You do.
And I will see you next time on Windows Weekly.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. You already knew all that. What you may not know is that TwitNow has a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.